Thank you very much, and I'll turn to our city clerk and see if she is ready as well.
Yes, we are ready. We have a quorum, and Colin is on.
Very good. Then I will call to order our special city council meeting for Monday, March 22nd, 2021 at 5 p.m. And this call to order is in compliance with the state and county shelter at home orders. Meetings will be held by teleconference until further notice. This meeting can be viewed on Channel 20 and is available on live streaming on the city's website and on www.slow-span.org. Members of the public are encouraged and invited to provide public comment during the meeting by calling area code 805-321-6639, and the phone lines are open now. So with that, Madam City Clerk, roll call, please.
Councilmember Bright.
Here.
Councilmember Miller.
Here.
Councilmember Robert.
Here.
Mayor Lee.
Here. Very good. Thank you. Next up is our public communications. During this time, the council will allow public communications for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. I will kind of hold this at the moment for those that are under closed session. So unless Mr. Hale tells me that I need that I'm not able to combine both public communications and on a closed session. So I'm assuming I can do that, Mr. Hale.
Combine both of them?
Yes.
Actually, I would recommend that you separate them and give the public the opportunity to speak to the closed session only, and then bring it back again on the regular session.
Very good. Then I will open this up to public communications for those items that are not on the agenda this evening. Those that are interested can call 805-321-6639, and I'll turn to our city clerk and see if there's any members of the public that want to speak on public communications at this part of the meeting.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. Then I will bring it back and close public council or public communications and bring it back for closed session announcement by our city attorney or introduction, rather.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We are about to convene in closed session for two agenda items. One is conference with labor negotiators pursuant to government code 5497.6. The agency negotiators are Special Counsel Kay Johnson, City Manager Matthew Brownson, Administrative Services Director Deanne Purcell, Finance Manager Annette Munoz, and Management Analyst Human Resources Director Carlin Maddox. The represented employee group will be the General Employee Service Employees International Union Local 620. The second item that you'll be dealing with in closed session is a conference with the Council on Anticipated Litigation. The potential of initiating litigation pursuant to paragraph 4, subdivision D of section 54956.9. This matter represents only one case, and is your session.
Very good. Thank you for that introduction. I will turn to our city clerk and see if there's any members of the public that want to speak under public communications for closed session.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. Then we'll go ahead and close public comments for closed session, and we will recess into closed session. And at this point, I guess I will. Sims, see if we're ready on the city side.
We are ready on our side as well. I do not see Councilmember Bright yet.
Okay. So we will do a slow roll on the 6 o'clock hour, anticipating that Councilmember Bright will join us momentarily. So as we are waiting for Councilmember Bright to join us, let's go ahead and reconvene out of our closed session meeting. and turn it over to the city attorney to do an announcement out of closed session.
Thank you, Mayor. We just met in closed session related to a conference with legal counsel on anticipated litigation. This was pursuant to paragraph 4, subdivision D of section 54956.9. Other than direction by counsel to proceed forward with litigation, there's no other reportable actions related to this matter.
Very good. Thank you for that announcement out of closed session. So we will adjourn our special meeting for the City Council where that was held at 5 p.m. and consider that meeting closed. And then I will call to order our City Council meeting of March 22nd, 2021. Our 6 o'clock meeting time, and in compliance with the state and county sheltered home orders, meetings are being held by teleconference until further notice. This meeting can be viewed on channel 20 and is available on live streaming on the city's website and on www.slow-span.org. Members of the public may provide public comment during the meeting by calling in at 805-321-6639, and phone lines are open now. So with that, if you would join me in a moment of silence, please, as we take a moment for the unresolved actions that are occurring in Boulder, Colorado, and ask for the protection of law enforcement as well as members of the public and that community. So if you would all take a moment of silence, please. Thank you for joining me in that moment of silence. So next up is our flag salute, where we always enjoy having the, we'll say, the youth of our community come join us and lead us in the flag salute. And tonight is no exception. We are very happy and honored to have Miss Chloe Benson, age 10, and Tyler Benson, age 7, who both attend Pacific View Academy and are both looking forward to being able to play baseball with their older brother as the youth sports open again this spring. So, Tyler, Chloe, if you would lead us in the flag salute, please.
Ready? Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. I definitely appreciate that. So, and in a moment of quick change, I bet you you're going to turn into a slightly older, perhaps slightly taller gentleman in front of that screen momentarily. So thank you, Chloe. Thank you, Tyler. So appreciate you being here tonight. So with that, I will turn it over to our city clerk to do a roll call, please.
Councilmember Bright.
I'm here.
Councilmember Miller.
Here.
Councilmember Robert.
Here.
Mayor Lee.
I am here as well. So we do have a quorum and we will proceed to our next item on the agenda, which is closed session announcements. And this is for items on the March 8th, 2021 closed session. So I'll turn it over to our city attorney, Mr. Hale, see if there's any announcements out of closed session.
Good evening again. You met, as you articulated, on March 8th. Related to a public employee performance evaluation consistent with Government Code Section 54957B1. The title of the employee was city manager, and at that point in time, there were no reportable actions taken during closed session.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. So that'll take us to our next item, which is agenda review, where at this time, the City Council may review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests or make announcements regarding any changes to the order of the day. I'll turn it to the city manager, as I know he has one change that he would like to request this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. Staff is planning to pull item number 7, the first reading introduction of an ordinance to approve the speed survey and adopt new speed limits. We will reschedule this to a date certain on April 12th.
Very good. Thank you for that that change and that explanation. So let's see if there's any other members of the council that have any changes that they'd like to make to the agenda. We'll start with Councilmember Bright.
No, thank you. No changes for me.
Very good. Councilmember Miller?
No changes. Thank you.
And Councilmember Robert?
No changes either, thank you.
None from my, me either, so I'll look forward to a motion on the agenda.
Okay, well, I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda as presented with the exception of item 7.
And actually, we currently are still under agenda review, so we haven't actually got to the consent agenda yet, so this is just for agenda review.
Well, see, I'm just trying to move things along here.
Exactly.
Sorry.
So we'll consider that a motion to proceed with the agenda as published, correct?
Yes, please.
I'll second it.
With the exception of item 7.
With the exception, okay, very good. So we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Very good. We will proceed with the agenda as modified. So that will take us to our ceremonial calendar, where tonight we have one item, which is the proclamation for the month of the child. And I've asked Councilmember Miller to read that proclamation for us this evening. So, Councilmember, if you would, please.
Yes, thank you. So, proclamation of the Grover Beach City Council designating the month of April 2021 as Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month. Whereas the Grover Beach City Council recognizes that every moment in a child's life is an opportunity for that child to learn, that the quality of these experiences may determine whether a child succeeds in school and in life, and that all children need caring and loving adults in their lives. And whereas April, Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, marks the time to recognize that our community's children are precious assets, that the quality of their early years is our collective responsibility, and that we commit ourselves to ensuring that each and every child experiences a high quality early environment, a home, at home, at childcare, school, and in the community, that will promote their optimal development. And whereas in solidarity of the We Are the Care initiative, we as a community of partners and leaders envision the San Luis Obispo County where all families can find and afford quality care for their children, and where child care professionals are valued for their critical role in building a solid foundation for children and families to thrive in the world. Whereas a variety of virtual and safe outdoor activities hosted at sanluischildcare.org honoring Month of the Child will provide an opportunity to acknowledge the dedication of individuals and organizations improving and enriching the lives of children and youth in our county, and raise the awareness of the community, employers, and elected officials of the need to improve the quality, availability, and accessibility of programs supporting children. Whereas Friday, April 2nd, 2021 commemorates hashtag Wear Blue for Kids Day, raising awareness for Child Abuse Prevention Month and recognizing that each of us has a role to play in ensuring the safety of our children and to pledge our support for strategies that strengthen families and protect our young ones. And whereas in this caring and connected county, we will, including and beyond the Month of the Child, continue to dedicate our efforts and our resources to investing in our community's future by investing in and supporting our community's children and youth. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council hereby proclaims April 2021 as the Month of the Child, Child Abuse Prevention Month, in witness thereof. I've hereunto set my hand and caused the seal of the city of Grover Beach to be affixed this 22nd day of March 2021. That would be Mayor Jeff Lee.
Very good. Thank you, Member Councilmember Miller, for reading that proclamation. And I understand we do have Shannon Messerly with us this evening to accept the proclamation. So, Ms. Messerly, are you with us?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you for joining us.
Perfect. Thank you, Mayor Lee. And thank you, council members and city staff, for the proclamation. Happy Month of the Child. I am Shannon Messerly, and I'm representing Grover Beach as a resident, but also San Luis Obispo County Child Care Planning Council. You may also remember me from my work with We Are the Child Care Initiative. Thank you for the opportunity to celebrate our community's 54,000 children and their families. They live, grow, play, and learn among us in this county every day. April, as you know, is Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, and we hope that you will join us and kids of all ages at one of the many events during the month. We usually host the Children's Day in the Plaza in downtown SLO. However, in an event, in an effort to keep our children, families, and community safe, we are shifting to a month-long celebration of virtual activities every day in April. It'll be showcasing some of our amazing community resources, programs, and activities. We encourage you to check out our website, sanluischildcare.org, or follow us on social media. There will be a new spotlight every day. We also invite you to join the charge in advocating for our littlest learners by joining me and supporting and participating We Are the Care initiative, where we're all looking for ways to engage local government, child care workforce, and build bridges with the business community. We know that now more than ever, children and families need our support and attention, and we know that sustaining child care as the backbone of economic vitality is essential. So April is only one of 12 months, and we are also proud to honor local hands-on heroes throughout the year. These heroes play a critical role in the lives of children and families, and you can also find those on our website and our social media. I encourage all of us to keep the children of our county in our hearts, our minds, and our commitments every day, every year. It's our collective responsibility to demonstrate daily that our youth are our highest priority, as evidenced by our collective commitment of time, money, and sustained effort and unified support. Again, thank you for this opportunity, and we look forward to another great year working together and creating a connected community where our children are our highest priority.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Messerly. Good to see you, and always good to hear how many hats you're still wearing while still living in Grover Beach. We always appreciate that. So before we
thank
let you
go,
my pleasure. Before we let you go, and you mentioned the website, and is that actually spelling out sanluischildcare.org?
Yes. Yeah, so it's www.sanluischildcare.org, all one word.
Very good. Thank you very much. So let's see if there's any questions or comments from the council. So we'll start with Councilmember Miller.
No questions for me. Thank you.
Councilmember Robert?
No questions for me either. Thank you.
And Councilmember Bright?
No questions. Just thank you very much for what you do. I appreciate you being here this evening.
Very good. Thank you, Shannon. Thank you very much. And
see
you again. We'll see you again as soon as we can when we're not all gathering virtually.
I would love that.
Very good. So we'll go ahead and close our ceremonial calendar item this evening. And that takes us to our presentations, which we don't have any this evening. This will take us to public communications, where if you would call in at 805-321-6639, you can provide public comments. And because at this time, the council will allow public communication with additional communication, if necessary, allowed after the regular business items. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items that are not on this agenda. So with that, I'll turn it over to our city clerk and see if we have members of the public on the line for public communications.
Yes, we have Andrea Rubin.
Good evening, Ms. Rubin.
Hello, my name is Andrea Uribe from the We Are the Care initiative. As you just heard in the proclamation, April is Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month. April marks a time to recognize that our community's children are precious, and the quality of their early years is our collective responsibility. We all have a role to play in ensuring each and every child has access to high quality early environments at home, at childcare, at school, and in the community that will promote their optimal growth and development. You might be wondering how you can honor and support children and families in our community during the month of April. Luckily, we have three opportunities to offer you. Number one, you can explore the hashtag Kids Are Essential initiative. This national campaign stands for high quality childcare, paid leave, economic security, maternal and child health, and mental health, and was born out of the many crises that are impacting children and families. COVID, racial injustice, and economic instability inspired this initiative, which upholds a goal to promote children in our society. Visit kidsareessential.org to learn more. Number two, assess the policies of the City of Grover Beach in regard to family-friendly practices. Your city is a major local employer and can be an example to other businesses in your community. By requesting HR or administrative staff to evaluate the family-friendly workplace policies created in place, you can better identify deficits and expand practices to support your employees. As a reminder, the We Are the Care initiative offers a family-friendly workplace toolkit containing a diverse selection of ideas and examples that can be implemented in order to better support families. Remember, family-friendly practices are better for businesses, better for the economy, and better for your city. Visit slowfamilyfriendlywork.org to access the toolkit. Finally, number three would be to honor Month of the Child and value the children and families in our county. Consider becoming involved with We Are the Care. Parents, business leaders, childcare professionals, elected officials, and all other members of the public are encouraged and welcome to join the initiative. We would love for the city to identify a new childcare liaison, but wish to remind you that all are welcome. We have four task forces that meet monthly, and we need the minds and talents that we know are out there in our community to help build this important movement. Visit first5slow.org to learn more about We Are the Care initiative. Thank you so much for your time and for your commitment to children and their families in this city. We will be back again soon with more information and updates.
Very good. Thank you for those comments, and I appreciate you hanging on through public communications to make them. So those were very, very necessary and important comments. Appreciate that. So let's turn back to our city clerk and see if there's anyone else on the line for public communications.
I have no one else on the line.
Very good. Thank you. I will go ahead and bring it back to public, close public comment, bring it back to the council. And kind of to build upon what Andrea was saying, the hashtag kids are essential and the other opportunities to create the We Are the Care initiative have already taken hold in some fashion in Grover Beach, obviously with the fact that we are down a council member, it looks like we do need to identify a liaison to the We Are the Care initiative again. So perhaps as we get a full council, that might be something that we ask the city manager to bring forward for us as well. Because I know we've had the discussion in the past and been very supportive of it. And I don't see any reason why we would not continue that support. So with that, unless there's other comments from the council members, not seeing anybody raise their hand. I'll go ahead and close public communication. And now, Councilmember Bright, we're going to head to our consent agenda, where this evening we do have a number of routine items that are scheduled for consideration as a group. The recommendations for each item are noted in parentheses, and we will ask members of the public in just a moment if they want to speak on any item that's on the consent agenda by calling in at 805-321-6639. But let's first see if there's any members of the council that have any questions or need to pull anything for separate action. So we'll start with Council Member Bright.
I just crack myself up sometimes. No, thank you. I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Very good. Council Member Roberts.
No questions.
Very good. Council Member Miller.
No questions.
Very good. I had no questions either, and so I'll turn it over to our city clerk to see if there's any members of the public that want to speak on a consent agenda item.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. They will go ahead and bring it back. And just for those who might be following along at home, we do have a number of items tonight, one of which is the treasurer's report for both the city as a whole, as well as our K-14 2017 street bonds account. We also do have minutes for consideration, a COVID-19 response update, and we do have the annual report on the status of implementation of the general plan. We did continue the first reading of the speed survey, but we also do have an award of a construction contract and award of construction maintenance contracts for citywide street repair light maintenance that the council had talked about several months ago. And then we have an award of professional services for the south half of the city sewer line video inspection. So lots happening in our consent agenda tonight. Obviously some great items coming forward as we continue the good work of the city. So I'll see if one of the council members is ready to make a motion on the consent agenda. And you are still muted.
Darn it. Okay. Now I'll make that motion that we accept the items on the consent agenda as presented.
I'll second.
Very good. We have a motion by Councilmember Bright, a second by Councilmember Miller. This looks like a roll call. So, Madam City Clerk, roll call, please.
Councilmember Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Miller.
Yes.
Councilmember Robert.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes. Very good. Thank you. Thank you, staff, for all the good work that comes forward with putting a consent agenda together and keeping up the good work of the city. So that will take us to our public hearings, of which we don't have any public hearings this evening, which then takes us to our regular business items. And our first item is a policy direction on contracting with the City of Pismo Beach for law enforcement emergency communication services. I'll turn it over to our Police Chief Peters for the discussion, please.
Thank you, Mayor Lee. Mayor Lee, members of the council and community, I'm John Peters, your police chief. Joining me tonight is also Police Chief Jake Miller from the City of Pismo Beach. He will be available a little bit later for any questions or comments towards the end of our presentation. We'll go ahead and get started. Tonight we bring before you a topic of policy direction on contract and law enforcement dispatch services to the City of Pismo Beach. Go ahead, next slide, please. Dispatch regionalizing has been a widely discussed topic for 20 years in the Five Cities area. It's been discussed and it's been studied by the grand jury. It's also been studied by the cities involved in the area. And some of it has started to occur. In 2014, the Arroyo Grande Police Department contracted dispatch services to the SLO Sheriff. And in 2018, the Five Cities Fire Department contracted their services from the Grover Beach Police Department to the SLO County CAL FIRE. Currently, only the Grover Beach Police Department and the Pismo Beach Police Department still operate emergency communication centers in the Five Cities area. Next slide, please. A little bit of background about the Grover Beach Police Department dispatch center. It does have 6 full-time employees. That's 1 supervisor and 5 dispatchers. Currently, there are 3 vacancies within the dispatch center. We have 1 dispatcher who's out on personal leave, and we have 2 dispatchers that are working. We are utilizing the services of a property records technician to fill in some of those vacancies. And since September of 2020, we have been contracting nighttime dispatching services with the City of Pismo Beach. They have been providing those services from the 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. hours, except they also on Tuesday and Thursday provide from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. So then they've been doing a very good job. Next slide, please. So this discussion tonight involves a contract and consolidation plan that staff has come up with. What it involves is the topic of discussion to contract dispatching services, the law enforcement dispatching services to the City of Pismo Beach. We at Grover Beach Police Department would then expand our records and property division to 4 full-time employees by bringing on 2 employees from the current dispatch center staff. We would also adjust our property and records technician's salary to a salary schedule that is consistent with the average of the SLO County average for the like positions. And then we would also modify a current job description of the property records technician to include duties of a lead records property technician, which also identifies the custodian of record. Next slide, please. This next slide gives you a little bit of a look over the current budget for the Grover Beach Communications Center. Like I said, 6 full-time staff and employees, the salary stated over to the right. We also have the supplies and operating and service contracts. And then last year we had some debt service as well. Our total salaries and services are for $749,730. That's what it actually costs for us to run the communications center this fiscal year. Next slide, please. The Pismo Beach Emergency Communications Center, in comparison to ours, is staffed with 6 dispatchers and 1 supervisor, so they have 1 more personnel than we do currently. Their dispatch center was just recently in November recognized as the 4th nationally accredited communications center in the state of California. This is a huge recognition that, as you can tell, there's over 400 communication centers in California, and for Pismo Beach to have one of four that's recognized in the state is an extremely well accomplished department. Currently, they dispatch for Grover Beach Police Department at nighttime, and our staff has found that they have provided a professional and thorough service for not only the staff, but our callers that have called in at night needing some assistance. And so we are pleased with the service that they have provided. Next slide, please. The ongoing costs, which is kind of a topic when we talk about the consolidation portion of this, the ongoing costs would be retaining those 2 dispatch employees into the records department. And that would be an ongoing cost of their salary benefits and so forth. There would still be some operating costs and supplies and services, but we would be able to reduce that by about 50%. And then our service contracts would stay the same, except for we would have a little bit of an increase, a $6,000 per year increase, in order to maintain a fiber connection between Grover Beach and Pismo Beach Police Departments. So all in all, the overall ongoing cost that we would maintain is about $250,000. Next slide, please. When you combine our ongoing cost of about $250,000 with the first-year contract cost of Pismo Beach in their contract of about $540,000, the total comes just shy of $790,000. In that contract that Pismo Beach will be providing, Grover Beach will be paying for the services of 4 full-time dispatchers and all the other ancillary costs that come with that, such as overtime and training and so forth. Next slide, please. So some of the benefits of contracting with Pismo Beach is that we really start to address that regional communication center that has been talked about for probably 20 years or more. Just in my 15 years here in Grover Beach, it's been a topic of discussion at least 3 times where multiple studies have been performed. And that shows that there are some very good benefits of regionalizing dispatch services. We will also be able to have increased capabilities with 2 dispatchers on duty at all times. The City of Pismo Beach will maintain their dispatcher on duty, and the City of Grover Beach would also have a dispatcher on duty that Pismo Beach would provide. The benefit of having 2 dispatchers on duty at all times, currently we do not. When there's an emergency that may go across city limits, it's beneficial. Those dispatchers can immediately communicate with one another. They're sitting in the same room. They can share the information, and that makes the community safer, and it makes the officer's job a lot safer. So we've already seen several instances since Pismo Beach has been dispatching for us where this has worked out well in favor of the officers and ultimately in the safety of our communities. Together with a contract, we can also host technology together. We don't have to both have separate server systems and computer systems. Everything would actually be hosted at Pismo Beach, and we would help to pay for some of those costs on hosting that technology, and which in the long run reduce the long-term cost for both Pismo Beach and Grover Beach. Again, I won't go over it, but they're nationally accredited, and it's a lot of standards that to meet that accreditation, and I'll defer to Chief Miller on that because he was well involved in helping his agency get that accreditation. And then finally on this topic is we have also begun discussions with the City of Arroyo Grande to join that regional effort and to actually come back and contract services with Pismo Beach as well. This has been a group discussion amongst the cities and the staff, and I think in the end, a regional approach with all 3 cities in 1 dispatch center would be ideal for the 5 cities area. Next slide, please. So the consolidation portion of this covers the Grover Beach personnel adjustments. Our dispatch supervisor and lead communications technician would be reclassified as records property technicians, and then they would be added to the records property division. That would allow the records property division to run a seven-day week schedule, allowing four services to be offered to the community 7 days per week, minus holidays. We would unfortunately see one full-time employee that would have to be laid off if they could not be relocated to a position within the city if there was one available. Currently, there is not one available, and we have already had discussions with all employees that are affected. We would amend the job description for the records and property technician to add that special assignment of the leads records property technician, who will be doing the custodian of records duties. Those duties are currently performed by a commander, but they're better suited to be performed by a records custodian. And then we would also amend the classification and compensation plan for the records and property technician so that the current salary of the lead communications technician is utilized for the new classification and compensation plan. That current salary of lead communications technician is in the average for the Slo County cities that also run a property and records technician position. Next slide, please. The fiscal impact, if this was all approved by council to move forward, would be about $47,931 to the next fiscal budget. That does not include any negotiations, as you know, which are going to begin here shortly. But just off the immediate cost, it would be about $48,000. Next slide, please. So your alternatives are to direct staff to move forward with the contract and consolidation proposal, or provide staff with direction not to move forward with such a plan, and also provide staff with further direction. Next slide, please. At this point, I will open it up for questions or comments. Like I said, Chief Jake Miller is online here, and we'll be able to respond to any comments, especially if you had any regarding the accreditation.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation, Chief. Let's see if any members of the council have any specific questions for you before we invite Chief Miller, to come up and make some comments. So I'll look at Councilmember Bright first for any questions.
Thank you. I'm a little hazy on the salary part. So in reading the staff report, am I correct in the fact that that we don't have a position, that we would be creating a position, or would we be updating a position? Can you just explain that to me again, please, Chief?
Sure. We do have two property records technician positions right now that are working full-time at the department. We would expand that to four positions, and then we would move two of those employees over. The salary portion of it is that current records property technician salary that we currently utilize is about 7.5% below the county average of all the cities. So we would correct that.
Okay, so that there would be parity.
Correct.
Right. Okay, very good. And so then by doing this whole shift, then we would be able to have counter hours at our station 7 days a week, except for holidays.
Correct.
I think that's marvelous. Okay. Those were my only two questions. Thank you.
Very good. Next, we'll turn to Councilmember Miller.
Thank you, Mary Lee. I would like to hear more about the accreditation for the Pismo Police Department and their dispatch.
Very good. Let's see. Let's check in with Councilmember Robert real quick before we invite Chief Miller to come up.
No, I have no questions at this time. Thank you.
Very good. So then let me just ask one follow-up question to Councilmember Bright's question for the Chief. So the two additional staff members, so the workload is sufficient enough to where it would require those four positions, the expansion of the two from our current, which would again allow for full-time staffing, weekends and holidays notwithstanding, for our front counter and public communication staff, correct?
That is correct. Our dispatch, as set up right now, does all the data entry for the officers' reports. And the if it transitions over to Pismo Beach, we would not have them do that for us. That will stay here, so we'll need those additional staff members to make that happen.
Okay, very good. And before we invite Chief Miller to make some comments, so you had mentioned that Arroyo Grande has an opportunity to consider this action as well. So what, from a budgetary standpoint, what would be the anticipated costs or adjustments or potential benefits to Grover if all three organizations were to participate in this joint dispatch?
Yes, if all three agencies participated together, the Grover Beach would see a cost savings, and that would depend on when Arroyo Grande actually joined. If they joined mid-year, say in January of 22, then our cost savings would be about $30,000 or so. If they came on the following year, at the start of year two of the contract, then our cost savings would be a little bit over $65,000, if I recall correctly. So a little bit of cost savings for us. We would not be paying for four positions. We'd be paying for 3.5 positions.
Okay. Very good. And then one last question is, realizing that there is a slight increase in the overall cost at this point, that is more than offset by the community service and the level of service that our city is anticipating from our police department, and that would be maintained or exceeded, correct?
That's correct.
Very good. Thank you for allowing me to ask that question in such a fashion that it was all you had to do is say yes or no. Thank you. So with that, I'll turn it to our city clerk and invite Chief Miller from the city of Pismo Beach to join us. And Chief, always good to see you. And I understand congratulations are in order as well. So as you hopefully conclude this item before you retire, this will be the biggest feather in your cap, I'm sure.
Thank you, and good evening, Mayor and Council. We're very excited to partner in this with the Grover Beach Police Department in the city of Grover Beach. So thank you for having me on this evening. I know one of the questions had to do with our accreditation, and you may or may not know that back in 2007, the Pismo Beach Police Department achieved a national accreditation through the Commission on Accreditation of Law Enforcement Agencies. This was a group that actually was funded through a DOJ grant in the mid-70s as a result of us wanting to get back to our communities. And four organizations, IECP, National Sheriff's Association, National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Officers, as well as PERF, all came together for that grant and came up with best practices nationwide. With that, there's approximately 484 standards to achieve accreditation. And specifically to dispatch, there is one chapter of 18 standards for the overall law enforcement accreditation. In 2016, we wanted to take on a new endeavor. We found out that communication centers themselves could be accredited. And so we started after a standalone independent accreditation of our communication center. With that came an additional 207 standards, of which there's about 383 specific items that we have to meet. And they span from the agency's authority to organization, goals, staffing, recruiting, complaint procedures, planning, training, promotions, and operations. And so it's quite an endeavor. And with a lot of hard work from our staff, mostly in the communication center, we successfully achieved that accreditation last November. And so we're very proud of that. We certainly hope that our community is proud of that, and that your community will be proud of that too, as hopefully we get a chance to serve you with emergency communications.
Very good. Thank you, Chief. Appreciate that. Let's see if there's any other specific questions for the Chief. I'll start with Council Member Miller.
Thank you for that explanation. No further questions for me. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Roberts.
No, thank you, Chief Miller. Nice to see you. Thank you.
See you.
Very good. And Councilmember Bright.
Nope. I think that was pretty clear. So thank you.
Very good. And Chief, I just had two very easy logistical questions for you. And I know it was in the staff report that the city of Pismo Beach, their city council did authorize you to enter into these contract discussions. So I anticipate that you have the room, the availability, all the necessary equipment, notwithstanding what might become as part of this contract, in order to provide the services that we're looking to contract with you. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
Very good. Great. Well, before I say thank you for your time this evening, is there anything else you wanted to share on this item before we go to our full public comment, which can be completed by calling in at 805-321-6639? Chief Miller?
Nope. Nothing else for me. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, sir, for joining us. So let's see if there's any members of the public that do want to speak on this item. I'll look to our city clerk and see if there's anyone on the line for public communications.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. I will go ahead and close public communications on this item, bring it back to the council for discussion and or possible motion. So let's start with Councilmember Bright.
Thank you. Well, I am really pleased about having counter hours 7 days a week. So, and I think that our residents will be as well. So I'm a fan. So I would be supporting this concept. Thank you.
Very good. Next we'll go to Councilmember Miller.
Thank you. I think taking a regional approach makes a lot of sense, given the opportunity for better coordination between the two cities and possibly three in the future. Having two dispatchers available at the same time equates to better coverage and results in safer communities for us all. So I am in complete support of the consolidation proposal.
Very good. Councilmember Roberts.
I, too, am in complete support. I know you've been working on this for many years and you've got all the I's dotted and the T's crossed, and I congratulate you for all your hard work in making this happen. We really appreciate it. It's going to be a great benefit to the citizens of Grover Beach and Pismo. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. And next, I'll express my support as well. So there may be some folks in the community who are going to say that there is a cost impact associated with this. And I think it is a nominal cost impact, but I think the benefit to the city, the residents, and just the regional partnership between Grover Beach and Pismo Beach more than pays for that in dollars and in community relations and public relations between the two cities. So I am in support of this as well. So let me turn it over to our city manager briefly to see if he has any comments before we look to a motion.
Thank you, Mayor and Council members. I just want to take a moment and recognize the work of our two police chiefs, Chief Peters and Chief Miller. They've done tremendous work in really fleshing this out and really using a pilot program that was started back in the fall to test out how this could work and really fleshing it out to what you see before you today. It really is a model of government working well and working collaboratively to get the job done for our communities in the most efficient and effective manner possible. And it shows local governments working together. And I really wanted to highlight this and thank the work of our two chiefs, along with Chief Martinez and Arroyo Grande, as discussions are underway, as the chief mentioned, about having them join this at some point. This is what the Five Cities area is all about. And I want to thank the two chiefs and also add my comments to Chief Miller upon his upcoming retirement and wish him the very best and thank him for all of his service and support to his community, but also to our Five Cities area overall. Thank you.
Yes, he will, Mr. Chief Miller, you will be sorely missed, but hopefully you will enjoy your retirement and not travel too far away from here in that retirement.
Thank you so much.
So with that, I'll come back to the council and see if who's ready for a motion.
I can make the motion. So I'll motion to contract with the City of Pismo Beach for law enforcement emergency communication services and for the development of an agreement for these services.
I'll second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Madam City Clerk, roll call, please.
Councilmember Miller.
Yes.
Councilmember Robert.
Yes.
Councilmember Bright.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes. Very good. That does pass. And we look forward to the final agreements getting signed, and appreciate both chiefs' work. And we will conclude business on that item unless either the chiefs or Mr. Bronson has any need for additional direction on this item.
No, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. That will take us to item number 11 this evening, which is a Central Coast Blue operating agreement and related CEQA actions and an updated utility rate study. So let's see, looks like there's a lot of people on this one. So I'm going to turn it over to the city manager first to see how he wants to introduce folks.
Fair enough, Mr. Mayor. I'll be brief. So continuing the theme of regional collaboration is this next item, and this is a very noteworthy item for a lot of reasons that we've talked about in previous meetings. This is a Central Coast Blue operating agreement, related to CEQA actions, an updated utility rate study, and I'm delighted to bring this forward to the council, and I'll turn it over to our Public Works Director, Greg Ray, to lead the presentation.
Thank you, City Manager Bronson. Good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council. As Matt mentioned, I am your Public Works Director and City Engineer. First of all, Central Coast Blue, some background, it's a regional recycled water project designed to further purify wastewater for injection into the ground and eventual reuse as potable water. This project is designed to protect our groundwater basin against saltwater intrusion, but ultimately the project will provide a reliable supplemental water supply to the cities of Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, and Pismo Beach. Phase one of the project will treat and inject already treated wastewater, from the Pismo Beach Wastewater Treatment Plant. And this is the primary subject of this item tonight, phase one of the project. Phase two may be implemented in the future and would treat and inject wastewater from the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District Plant. That's a mouthful. That's what we call the SAN District. The advanced treatment facility is planned to be located in the city of Grover Beach. We need to move some slides here. Sorry, Wendy, do you have control of the slide? There we go. Thank you. And next slide, please. Sorry, I'm going pretty fast there. The project is important to the city because of the impacts of recent historic drought and what those impacts have done to our water supply. For example, water levels in Lopez Lake are currently at 40% and have reached this level several years in a row recently. Also, ongoing drought lowers water levels in our groundwater aquifer and also increases the potential for seawater intrusion into the aquifer. The need for additional and reliable supplies is shared by our surrounding communities and has led to this unique and historic partnership in developing this project with the cities of Pismo Beach and Arroyo Grande. Next slide, please. And I should mention, I'm sorry, on the previous slide, but that's okay. I'll just mention that we've also received participation and support from the Oceano Community Services District, the SAN District, that's the SSLO CSD, and the County of San Luis Obispo. Sorry about that, Wendy. Next slide, please. This slide shows the proposed advanced treatment facility located at the south end between Barca and Huber Streets in what is now primarily a vehicle storage yard. Next slide, please. The project team also developed a website. It's been up since, I believe, 2019. And that website has up-to-date information on the project. And as you see before you, this is the project logo with Central Coast Blue, One Community, One Water, One Future as the project slogan. Next slide, please. The project partners formed a subcommittee to develop the draft framework for the operating agreement, and that was started in 2019. The framework defines how costs and benefits would be shared, how future participation from other parties could be accomplished, and it also identifies an enhanced groundwater management methodology. The draft framework was presented to the Grover Beach Council in January of 2020 and again in June of 2020. In June, the council approved the draft framework and provided authority for the city manager to enter into an agreement consistent with the draft framework. Next slide, please. So the final draft, which is attachment one to your written staff report, forms a management committee. It limits project revenue sources to the enterprise funds, provides for third-party participation, enhances groundwater management, includes a local hire good faith clause. It identifies Grover Beach as the property owner of the underlying property for tax reasons. It includes cost share agreements for each phase of the project and includes a number of off-ramps, with really the most important off-ramp being that at the pre-construction phase, if for some reason the project isn't awarded the grants, which we anticipate to cover much of the project construction costs. Next slide. This schedule identifies major project milestones, their duration, and expected start and finish dates. As you can see, the next phase after completion of the EIR is the land use permitting with the City of Grover Beach, then formal regulatory agency permitting, and ultimately the final design. Construction is expected to begin in the summer of 2023, and the project should be operational in early 2025. Next slide, please. So approval of the operating agreement requires environmental review and compliance with the California Environmental Quality Act, or what we call CEQA. Pismo Beach has been identified as a lead agency for CEQA, and Grover Beach, per CEQA, is a responsible agency. Public comments were received at project scoping sessions held in Pismo Beach previously and as part of their EIR public comment period. According to the EIR, all potential project impacts can be mitigated except for two, which is construction noise from well drilling and the land use impacts. Next slide, please. As a responsible agency, the Council of the City of Grover Beach is responsible for reviewing only those portions of the EIR within the city's permitting authority. In this case, the Council will need to adopt a resolution, which includes the CEQA findings, adoption of overriding consideration for impacts that cannot be mitigated to less than significant, and adoption of a mitigation monitoring and reporting program. Next slide, please. Moving on to the fiscal impact. Well, so the action tonight has no immediate fiscal impact, but there are, of course, significant costs associated with all phases of this project. Council's approval of the operation agreement would establish the city's commitment to participating in those project costs with off-ramps, as mentioned earlier. Grover Beach will participate and receive benefits to 37.7% of the project as currently identified in the operating agreement. And just for reference, Arroyo Grande is participating at 40.7%, and currently Pismo Beach is identified at 21.7%. Now, project participants have received $457,000 in grants so far and will apply for state and federal grants, including a $2 million Proposition 1 grant and $796,000 Title 16 grant to offset pre-construction costs. The total construction cost is estimated at $38 million, with the Grover Beach portion estimated at $14 million. Annual operating costs are estimated to be $1.7 million, again with the Grover Beach portion estimated at $640,000 approximately. And the property purchase is $1.8 million roughly, with the City of Grover Beach funding approximately $682,000. Next slide, please. Also this evening, as sort of a side, this staff is providing information about an update that we recently requested to the utility rate study, which was presented previously to council in February and included as attachment three to this report. The report was updated to include updated Central Coast Blue operations and maintenance costs and minor revisions to the water portion of the draft CIP. The updated study shows that the recommended 2% increases in the next 2 years will still be sufficient, with most residential customers seeing a small decrease in their water costs. In the following years, 2023, 24, and 25, the recommended rate increase changes from 2% to 3%, 4%, and 4% respectively. It is important to note that the recommended rates establish a framework for the maximum rates, but the council could enact lower rate increases, primarily depending on grant funding received for Central Coast Blue. This study does not consider future grants as required by the grant agencies. And I say that, as required by the grant agencies. That means that we're required in order to receive the grants to adopt a rate structure that could pay for Central Coast Blue without the grants. The study does maintain the recommended shift to a tiered residential water rate structure. So staff is seeking council approval and direction to proceed with noticing for a proposed Proposition 218 rate public hearing, tentatively scheduled for May 10th, 2021 at the City Council meeting. Pending the results of that public hearing and protest votes, new rates would basically take effect in July 1 of 2021. Next slide, please. So staff has provided a number of alternatives. The primary alternative one is staff's recommendation, and that is to adopt a resolution adopting CEQA findings, a statement of overriding considerations, and the mitigated monitoring reporting program, to direct the city clerk to file the notice of determination for Central Coast Blue, to reaffirm the city manager's authority to enter into an operating agreement for the Central Coast Blue project, and finally, to provide direction to staff to implement the Proposition 218 noticing process, which is required to hold a public hearing on May 10th of 2021, consistent with the updated utility rate study. And of course, the other alternatives indicated are that the council could provide alternate directions, including not adopting the resolution or not providing direction to implement the Proposition 218 process. I will add that we have Dan Heimel with WSC, which is the consulting firm to the partner agencies for Central Coast Blue, and also Annalise Meller with RENCON, who prepared the EIR, in case you have questions unique to each of those consultants. And also, I would like to, if I can, model the Central Coast Blue lapel pins, which we will get to council once we formalize this agreement. And so I'm going to, hopefully you can see this. I'll show it as close as I can. These are the new Central Coast Blue lapel pins. So with that, that concludes my presentation. And this is an opportunity for council to ask questions and provide comments. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Ray, for that that presentation. Appreciate the feedback and that input. And before I turn it over to council for questions, I will invite folks to call in if you have a public comment on this item at area code 805-321-6639. And I'll first turn to Councilmember Bright. And perhaps as you're asking questions, if you don't mind also giving us a quick update on the status of Zone 3 and our water situation, which may help to frame either others' questions or an understanding of why Central Coast Blue is being considered.
Oh, thank you. At our most recent Zone 3 meeting, which was this past Thursday, we were advised that the Lake Lopez Reservoir level was below 20,000 acre feet, which generally would trigger a low reservoir response plan. However, because the contracts are in transition at this point, we're not doing that at this point. However, they did suggest that the contractors, which of course are the cities that are involved in Zone 3, that we do consider conservation measures. Even though we have had some rain, it has not been nearly enough. Basically, since it has been so dry, the rain has just been enough to pretty much get the ground wet, but there hasn't been enough for much runoff to go into the reservoir and the creeks. And well, our city engineer could probably tell you this much more eloquently than I can. However, it is certainly an issue. So there just hasn't been enough rain, not enough water. So they are actually suggesting that we do go into conservation measures. So definitely we need another source of water. There's no doubt about it. And so I'm so happy that we do have another source of reliable water available to us. Is that sufficient?
That was a good update on for Zone 3. And then also let's see if you had any specific questions for Mr. Ray or others with regards to the Central Coast Blue, either the agreement, the statement of overriding considerations, i.e. the secret documents, or other questions on the project?
I have a couple at this point in time. I'd like to reserve the right to come back, if you don't mind. The one that I think, for me, most significant is regarding the CEQA document. Will any of the specific project findings, the benefits that outweigh the unavoidable impacts, such as those that are on page 30, will they influence any possible state or federal funding? So that's one question.
So next year, let's hold there. We can turn to either Mr. Buckingham, Mr. Ray, or Annalise Miller from RINCON is on the line. So who wants to handle that question?
I would suggest, as it relates to the statement of override considerations versus the anticipated or hopeful state and federal funding, probably a combination of Annalise Miller and Dan Heimel would be best to answer that question if you all are on the line. I see your logos, so I presume you are.
Yes, I am. I can start off, Greg. Thank you guys for having me here at this City Council meeting. Councilmember Bright, if I understand your question correctly, you're asking what the state agencies will be doing with these findings and statement of overriding considerations?
What I'm wondering is that would the fact that any of these unavoidable impacts, once we certify them, would that be a detriment, let's say, to any state or federal funding opportunities? Can I make myself clear?
Yes, thank you. Not to my understanding, but I'll also let Dan weigh in on that.
Yeah, I don't think so either. We've been having a very open and frequent dialogue with the different funding agencies and outlining where we're at within the environmental and other components of the project process. But it is a good question, and in the interest of due diligence, it's one we should reach out to them and ask. But, you know, based on all our previous conversations and our understanding of these funding programs and the fact that very similar projects to Central Coast Blue have been funded through these similar programs that will have very similar impacts, I do not anticipate that being an issue for Central Coast Blue.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. That's my only question at this point in time. Thank you, Mayor.
Very good. Thank you for that question. Councilmember Roberts, do you have any questions?
I have no questions at this time. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Miller.
Thank you. I have just a clarifying question. The prior utility rate study that was under discussion, that's no longer a valid rate study, correct? We're essentially starting from the beginning with a new rate study, and the new rates that are being proposed will be in lieu of what was discussed prior, not in addition to. Is that correct?
I think I can answer that. If that's okay, Mayor, I presume you want me to take this one at a time. Okay. Yeah. So this is really not a wholesale revamp of the rate study that was presented to you very recently and previously. It is just a minor tweak to that. So the tiered rate structure recommendation remains. The city income sources and operating budget revenues and expenditures remain roughly the same. There were some minor changes done to account for Central Coast Blue anticipated operating costs, as well as staff took the opportunity to make some minor tweaks to the water section of the capital improvement program to further accelerate projects ahead of the street program. So it's so similar as to be nearly the same study. The only difference would be that in the, it's a five-year rate study. So it's developed to make a recommendation for 5 years of rates, whether they be increases, decreases, or whatever they might have been. Previously, the recommended for each of 5 years was a 2% rate increase for each of 5 years. Because primarily the Central Coast Blue operating costs, also though, as it relates to the being able to fund the project without grant funding, the current recommendation is now 2%, 2%, 3%, 4%, and 4%. There's still tiny rate increases, you know, in relative to typical rate increases you see in communities. And still, most residential customers who moved into the tiered rate structure will see actually a decrease in their water costs.
And just to add to that, I'll just term this as a refinement of the existing rate study that reflects new information and our interest in wanting to make sure that this new rate structure reflected the very best, most accurate, timely information we have to set that threshold. As Mr. Ray mentioned, each year the council can enact an actual rate adjustment that is below the threshold. This establishes the ceiling. And we want to make sure that we had that ceiling appropriately set prior to the noticing and prior to the hearing coming up on May 10th.
Thank you.
Very good. Was there any other questions, Councilmember Miller?
None for me. Thanks.
Very good. Thank you, everyone, for those questions. I did just have one, perhaps two questions, and probably start with Ms. Miller. Can you give the definition of what a statement of overriding conditions is for an unavoidable impact? Effectively, this is not something that we as a council or as a community do very often. So can you just kind of give us a brief, what does that actually mean? Realizing in this case, it's for construction noise impacts and for land use. But if you could just kind of frame what that actually means for us, please.
Statement of overriding considerations is required under CEQA anytime a project will have a significant and unavoidable impact. And what that means is that the project has an environmental impact that cannot be feasibly mitigated through any of the identified mitigation measures. In this case, the construction noise and land use impacts are both related to the nighttime noise that is generated by 24-hour well drilling in close proximity to residences. And the reason why that this is a significant unavoidable impact is because one of the mitigation measures is to temporarily relocate residents who are located within 200 feet of the well sites to hotels or other similar accommodation. And as you may realize, you cannot force residents to leave their homes if they choose not to temporarily relocate. And because of that, the mitigation cannot be guaranteed to reduce that impact to a less than significant level. And so what you're doing with this statement of overriding considerations is you are acknowledging that that will be a significant unavoidable impact. And then you are making findings that the benefits of the project, whether those be social, economic, technological, or other factors, will outweigh the costs of that significant unavoidable impact.
Very nicely put. I appreciate that. And that then gives me an opportunity to ask Mr. Heimel the next question, which is, so why do we need to do 24-hour drilling for these wells? Why cannot we just do standard drilling of some certain amount during the day? Why does it need to be 24 hours a day?
Mayor Lee, the need for 24-hour drilling with these wells really gets to the need. Once you've opened up that hole in the ground, it's critical that you continue the drilling activities and get the proper protections in place to maintain that hole in the ground. Given the depth of these wells, if you were to lose that hole, for lack of a better term, during the construction, it would be prohibitively expensive. And so therefore, once you've opened it up, it's just up for these types of wells. It's important to just keep drilling until you can secure it with the proper pack and other materials so that you don't lose the well during construction.
Very good. Thank you both for that explanation. So I did have one other question, and it's more of a philosophical question. So I'll see if it might be more appropriate for Mr. Bronson in the fact that it has the MOU or the MOA has changed significantly since the last time we as a council had seen it. It probably hasn't changed substantively, but it has a lot more meat on the bones than it did the last time we saw this. So I wanted to give Mr. Bronson an opportunity to just kind of briefly walk through what's transpired since the last time we've seen this MOA.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So as Mr. Ray mentioned, in 2020, the council heard two items related to Central Coast Blue, and they really were what we consider to be a cost-sharing framework. So actually, the council has not seen the MOA, which is now called the Operating Agreement, prior to now. What you saw was a framework really around the topic of cost-sharing and how we split costs equally and fairly in this very unique partnership. So you saw a draft of that back in January of 2020, and then an updated final version in June, which you approved as a council, as did the cities of Pismo Beach and Arroyo Grande. Since then, the staff have worked very diligently in fleshing that out to this operating agreement that we have before us today, which really talks about how we govern this project, how we operate it. This is a very unique partnership where the facility would be located in Grover Beach and owned by the city of Grover Beach, staffed by Pismo Beach employees, with administration by Pismo Beach and effluent from Pismo Beach. That's a unique partnership in itself. And Arroyo Grande is the largest single ratepayer. So you have three different relatively small communities banding together on this unique project to provide sustainable water supply for decades to come, and then potentially morphing into a phase two, which would involve our sanitation district and also involve Oceano in a unique partnership. So this really is a groundbreaking, pardon the pun, local government partnership to help provide water supplies for years to come, to prevent seawater intrusion from entering into our groundwater basin, and to help really model environmental quality in action. So the agreement really helps to specify that. It forms a management committee that would provide oversight into this function so that each partner agency would be able to have the oversight we need on budget, operations, other details of the facility. We have different off-ramp, so to speak, so that if we don't get the grant funding or the Prop 218 hearings don't go forward, or we have construction costs that are significantly higher than expected, we have off-ramps that we could exit the project as a later step. We have details about project yield, project and penalties for over-extraction. That was a big point. We want to make sure that what we're putting in the bathtub does not seep out of the bathtub, and that other users outside of the partner agencies can't extract more than what they should. So all those details were built in the operating agreement. It involved a lot of discussions with city managers, public works directors, with the support of our city attorneys. I want to thank Dave Hale for his work with this, along with his colleagues. It really is a great example of government working collaboratively to provide a public benefit. In this case, sustainable water supply for our five cities area. So the operating agreement really helps to formalize that, and we are asking for the council to reaffirm the city manager's authority to enter into the agreement with the information before you. Does that provide greater clarity, Mr. Mayor?
Very good context. I appreciate that, Mr. City Manager. So, and then one last question for Mr. Heimel, in the fact that Pismo Beach did approve this operating agreement at a prior city council meeting, correct?
Yes, that is correct. On March 16th, I believe, at Pismo Beach approved the operating agreement.
Very good. And then Arroyo Grande is scheduled to hear this item tomorrow night, correct?
That is correct, yes.
Very good. So with all of that as context, I will go ahead and invite the public to call in on this item at area code 805-321-6639. And I will turn it over to our city clerk to see if there's any members of the public on the line for this item.
Yes, we have Joshua Medrano.
Good evening, Joshua.
Good evening. Thank you for having me. My name is Joshua Medrano. I am the Executive Secretary of the Tri-Counties Building and Construction Trades Council, San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties. We represent over 7,500 hardworking men and women. And we are here asking the Grover Beach City Council to strengthen the MOU and operating agreement language to include a community workforce agreement, like the one used by the South County Sanitation District on the redundancy project and the City of San Luis Obispo on the wastewater treatment facility. Local Hire keeps tax dollars local and puts local workers to work on the projects here in the communities where they live, pay property taxes, and spend their wages. Over 80% of the workers on the Slo Wastewater Treatment Facility project live in Slo County due to the CWA on the project. The CWA ensures that local apprentices get put to work on the project, creating a pathway for local workers to a middle-class job with benefits so that they can live here and raise their families here. The South County Sanitation District, which Grover Beach is a member, adopted CWA on their redundancy project, as you all know, ensuring that local workers and local apprentices do the work. We greatly appreciate you considering this. This is all about putting these dollars to work for everybody. Thank you for your time.
Very good. Thank you, sir, for those comments. Let's see if there's anyone else on the line for public comment on this item.
Yes, we have Richard Madej.
Good evening, Richard.
Yes, good evening, City Council and staff. My name is Richard Madej. I represent the Sheet Metal Workers, Local 104, roughly represent about 350 who all live in San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties. First and foremost, I think this is a wonderful project. I'm very much supportive of it. And just to kind of echo what the last caller said, you know, yes, the South County Sanitation District, which Grover Beach is a member, did adopt the CWA on the redundancy project. Again, we're trying to get local workers who live in the communities that we work and live in on these projects. The CWA also ensures that local apprentices get put to work on a project, creating, you know, a career for them. And again, to try to achieve the middle class, and also benefits that we can live and stay here and raise their families as well. About 80% of the workers on the Slo wastewater treatment plant live in Slo County, and simply this was due because of the community workforce agreement that was agreed upon. Without these checks and balances, we won't be able to get here. But again, I'm just stressing the local Hire keeps all of our tax dollars local and supports the communities that we work and live in. Just one little highlight. One thing that the sheet metal workers are going to be doing, or actually we're in the process of, is building a 6,500 square foot training center in the beautiful city of Napomo to support projects like these. We do want to put our men and women to work, and we are putting and investing the money to do so, so we can create these wonderful careers. Thanks for your time, and you guys have a good night.
Thank you, Rich. Appreciate those comments. Let's see if there's any other members of the public that want to speak on this item.
We have Mike.
Good evening, Mike.
Hi, this is Michael Spicarola, San Luis Obispo County Office of Education. San Luis Obispo County Office of Education has partnered with the Slo County Workforce Development Board and the Tri-Counties Building and Construction Trades Council to offer a multi-craft core curriculum pre-apprenticeship program to help prepare local workers for a career in the building trades. Including a CWA, a community workforce agreement, on the Central Coast Blue project will help ensure that local workers and local graduates of the pre-apprenticeship program have jobs here in our community where they live. Local Hire keeps tax dollars local and puts local workers to work on the projects here in the communities where they live, pay property taxes, and spend their wages. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate those comments as well. So, and let's check back in with the city clerk, see if there's any other members of the public that want to speak on this item.
No, we have no one else on the line.
Very good. Thank you for that. I will go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to the council for questions or additional questions or comments. So maybe the first thing I'll do is either turn probably to Mr. Hamel or Mr. Ray. and see, or actually maybe perhaps Mr. Bronson, to see what kind of discussions there were had besides the addition of the local hire provisions that are in the operating agreement currently. Is there was there further discussions there, and perhaps adding additional strength to the bid advertisement opportunities?
Maybe I can take the first response and then turn it over to Mr. Ray or Mr. Heimel to add to this. So page 17 of the operating agreements under what's called Exhibit A does have language in subsection 2 about every contractor submitting a bid for this work shall agree to make a good faith effort to hire qualified individuals who are local residents, and it further defines what a good faith effort means in contacting recruitment sources, advertising for qualified individuals, identifying subcontractors whose workforce includes qualified individuals locally in the interest of accomplishing the goal of local hire. This was seen as a starting point in this operating agreement. The local hire discussion came up to a certain extent from our council a year ago, but also from the city of Rio Grande. And given the different places in the process that each city took this, this language is seen as a starting point for this agreement. A community workforce agreement or project labor agreement, there are various terms for similar local hire actions, are significant policy issues and significant work products that would take some time and effort to work through. I would say that in the case of the sanitation district, that CWA was approved as part of the construction bid documents for the redundancy project. We're quite a ways away from the construction documents and the construction process of CCB. So perhaps the policy discussion may be better timed for the construction process as we get closer to that versus the operating agreement that really sets forth the governance, the funding, and the overall administration of the project, while we still achieve the interest of local hire for now, and we have further discussions with local agencies about what that could mean to strengthen that over time.
Very good. Appreciate that explanation. Let's see if the members of the public who spoke generated any questions for council members. I'll start with Council Member Bright, or if there's any other questions that arose.
Thank you. Well, I did have another question that did occur prior to public comment, and that was regarding the noise mitigation issue. Is there any idea how long that drilling is going to go on? Do we know if it's going to be weeks, months? Can someone answer that?
I'll ask that Dan Heimel field that question. And Dan, you might mention that, you know, there's a number of wells and their approximate location. We do have at the end of the presentation a map. I can display that if you need that, or if council's interested in seeing it.
Yeah, I can answer Councilmember Bright's question.
The duration.
Yeah, it's. Well, we actually have some recent experience with drilling at one of these very similar wells, the test injection well that was drilled in Oceano over the last month or so. The overall construction period is scheduled for a period of a month or two. However, the concentrated 24-hour drilling can proceed much quicker than that, and it is in the time frame of weeks. Ideally, if things go well, and the, you know, the formations are in the within the aquifer as anticipated, those periods can be, yes, in the week, you know, 1 week or to 2 weeks or even less potentially time frames.
Okay, thank you. Well, that's good to know. Thank you. Question. Thank you very much. The question that I had after public comment is, when construction begins, who's going to be handling that? Will it be a cooperative effort, or will it be Grover Beach, since it's our property? Do we know how that's going to go? I don't know who wants to handle that one, but
I'm thinking we'll start it with either Mr. Bronson or Mr. Ray.
Perhaps I can answer that. I mean, and Daniel, check me on this. Basically, the project would hire consultants, essentially, to manage construction with the management committee, the operating committee, oversight on the construction firms and the consulting firms who would be managing construction. So I believe that's the anticipated arrangement, yes.
And just to add to that, just to be even more direct, the city of Pismo Beach would lead that process. So they would actually be the ones to actually lead the contracting efforts in partnership with the other two cities as part of the management process, management committee process. But Pismo Beach actually would be taking the lead role in advancing that with oversight, transparency around cost and change orders and cost reviews as part of this process.
Okay, so if we were to want to go forward with a CWA included in the bid docs, we would want to discuss that, I guess, with the partners prior to that. Yeah.
And as the city's representative on the South Sand District, maybe just a clarification. The CWA was included as part of the bid documents, but it was actually approved prior to that, so it could be included within the bid documents, so that the contractors did know that a CWA was a provision, and the trade unions and the trade representatives were already signed on to that. So that it was a known part of the bid package.
Sure. I mean, of course, we'd certainly want to be known well in advance. Okay, I guess those were my questions that I had left. So thank you.
Very good. Next, I'll go to Councilmember Roberts, see if he has any questions.
Couldn't get to my mic, sorry. Something covered it up. I have no questions at this time. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Miller.
This might be a question for Ms. Miller regarding the noise mitigation. So kind of a follow-up question to the one Councilmember Bright had asked about temporary relocation. So if we have residents who cannot accept temporary relocation for whatever reason, it's not feasible or they can't physically do it, are there alternatives that are going to be offered to those families?
Yes, I can answer that. So there's not necessarily an alternative per se to temporary relocation, but there is a suite of other noise mitigation measures that are being implemented. So there are things like mufflers. None of the wells will be drilled at the same time to minimize overlapping construction noise. There will also be very high sound walls installed around each of the wells, which is what's currently in place at the test well. And all of these are intended to provide as much mitigation as possible from the noise. And so it won't be the same as if, you know, the wells were just being drilled without anything in between the residences and these wells, but it's just the factor that they're located so close that despite everything that it is physically possible to do and practicable to do, those residents will still experience an increased noise level at night.
Thank you, that's it for me.
Very good, and thank you, Ms. Miller, for answering Ms. Miller's question. Let's see where we go from here with respect to the, I see it as kind of three things tonight. We've got the adoption of a resolution adopting CEQA findings. We've got reaffirmation of the city manager's authority to enter the operating agreement. And then the confirmation of the utility rate study and further implementation direction for our public hearing on May 10th. So let's do that one first, if we could, and see if there's any concerns from a straw poll standpoint to receive the updated utility rate study findings and continue the process towards the Prop 218 hearing vote on, or excuse me, public hearing on May 10th. Anybody have any concerns or want to express comments on that item number three on our action list tonight? Seeing consensus to move forward, or Councilmember Bright?
Yes, I just wanted to confirm that this rate study and the suggested rate increase is simply a suggestion. And as we go forward to the upcoming years, those suggested rate increases may or may not be necessary. Am I understanding that correctly?
Generally speaking, though, I wouldn't call it a suggestion. I would say that this approves a recommended rate structure consistent with Proposition 218. And what that means is that based on the information before us, the council, if you take this action in May, would set a ceiling, would set a structure of rate adjustments over a five-year period, much like you did back in 2017 as a council, when you approved a significantly higher rate structure that provided that threshold. But each year, we looked at the data, looked at the costs, and recommended a rate for the upcoming year that may have been different. And ultimately, we were lower than the five-year structure over that time period. And we would hope to be in the same boat here as well, that we're adopting in May a structure, but then coming back to you each year based on new information, and hopefully, assuming the grants come in as we believe they will, then we could recommend ultimately a lower rate to enact in that upcoming fiscal year.
Yes, and I guess it wasn't clear, but these rates are suggested based on no grants being awarded, based on no grants being awarded.
This rate structure is being recommended based on the assumption for the grant process that we aren't receiving grant funds to show the grant agencies that we could fund this. However, we believe we are in an excellent position to receive significant grant revenue, and therefore we'd be able to come to council in a future year and be able to recommend a lower rate to enact in that upcoming fiscal year.
That's what I meant to say. Thank you.
Matt, Mr. Ray, go ahead and
Mayor,
add Mr. Ray.
For me to add just something to that. I would just add that the rate structure, the impacts on the rate structure recommendation are primarily realized in the third, fourth, and fifth year of the rate structure. That's that 3%, 4%, 4%, as opposed to the 2%, 2%, 2% that you saw in before we made the update. The first 2 years are really a direct reflection of your current operating and capital costs, and are more realistic, at least in the near term, not reflecting any issues with grants or Central Coast Blue costs.
That's correct.
Right. Okay. And that's really closer to a cost of living increase anyway, isn't it?
Pretty close.
That's correct. And more than two-thirds of residential customers would see a lower set of utility rates, which was continued with our February information as well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Very good. Any other discussion on the utility rate study findings? Councilmember Miller?
None for me. Thank you.
And Councilmember Robert?
None from me, thank you.
Very good, and I am going to be supportive of that one as well, so we'll accept that straw poll and kind of put it aside for a moment until we get to the larger action. So I will next go to the adoption of the resolution regarding the CEQA findings, a statement of overriding considerations, and the mitigation measures. Is there any questions, concerns, comments that council members want to make on this one? Councilmember Miller.
No, thank you.
And Councilmember Roberts?
No, thank you.
And Councilmember Bright?
No, thank you.
Okay, I have no concerns about that one either. I believe the CEQA process is ardently being followed, and realizing that short-term construction impacts, as they were laid out, were reviewed and undertaken by Ms. Miller and her team, Mr. Heimel and his team, and the benefits of the short-term impacts will greatly enhance the impacts and the benefits to the community. So that takes care of item three and item number two. That takes us to the reaffirmation of the city manager's authority to enter the operating agreement. So let's see who has comments on that one. So we'll start with Councilmember Bright.
I fully support that.
Okay, very good. Councilmember Miller.
I'm in support as well.
Very good, Councilmember Roberts.
I also am in support.
Very good, and I'm in support as well. So with a potential added wrinkle of perhaps requesting that the city manager and the operating group, as they continue to move forward, strengthen the opportunity for CWA as part of this project. And we could consider that as a council, having that as a potential off-ramp consideration, realizing we've got grants as an off-ramp. I think the provision for a CWA could be a potential off-ramp for us as a city. My participation in the South SAM CWA came at a time that was coincided with COVID. And the fact that that project is being built under the provisions of the CWA allows for the local workforce to be to augment whoever has come forward from a construction contracting standpoint. And it doesn't prohibit anybody from contracting. What it does is it provides an opportunity for contractors to work with our local trades organizations and apprentices and journeymen and skilled labor to make sure that the best and brightest are part of a project. So with the consensus of the council, I think we can, I don't know if we need to necessarily change the language tonight, but from a directive standpoint, an off-ramp could be a future consideration for a future council if they choose at that point to make that a significant discussion point. So I'll start with Councilmember Bright, see if there's any concern with that.
I'm just not quite sure what you're asking me.
And I think to clarify, is the provisions in the operating agreement are for local hire and for good faith effort. And I think in order to be able to actually enforce those, a stronger provision from our standpoint as a city council, as our operating agreements going forward, is to say, yes, we agree with those provisions. However, until Arroyo Grande and Pismo either consider that as an advancement opportunity, that could be tantamount to us saying, without that, we can decide at a future date whether to continue with the Central Coast Blue project. Not to say that we won't. But I think it's a stronger representation to say we want to take more than just the local hire provision, maybe not change the language tonight, but to take the local hire provision and augment it in the internal discussions before we go out to bid. Realizing we have two other jurisdictions that need to come to agreement on that as well.
So are you saying you want to insert that, or you just want to make a comment to the other jurisdictions?
From that perspective, I would say not to change the language, but to provide direction to whoever our representative is on that operating agreement. Obviously, the city manager is going to be one. A council member could be another one. But to say as our position as the project moves forward is we want to have the robust discussion about a CWA as part of the construction of the project.
I'm fine with that.
Okay. Councilmember Miller.
Thank you, Mayor Lee. I too would like to advocate to include stronger language requiring a community workforce agreement in the MOU, so long as it does not create an undue burden on the project, and with agreement from the other cities involved.
So just from a clarification standpoint, so you'd like to modify the language in the item tonight?
Not necessarily tonight, but once we have input and agreement from the other cities.
Okay, and I think that's where my discussion was going, is that we kind of approved the framework this evening, or the agreement with the direction internally to have those further discussions. Okay, so
yes.
Councilmember Roberts.
Yes, I agree with that. It's a good statement.
Okay. Yes. So from that perspective, let's see then, we've got consensus on all three of the items with an additional direction to management and to staff to advocate on behalf of the local hire and community workforce agreements. So with that, I think that's the three items before us on tonight's item. So who's prepared to make a motion? Mr. City Manager, you wanted to make a comment. You can't make a motion, but you can make
that's correct. Yes, sorry. Just to make sure I'm clear on council's direction with this last item. I'm not hearing, and maybe your motion will solidify this, but I'm not hearing the council's direction to make changes now to the operating agreement language that is before you for review, but to provide direction to staff and. As the staff lead for the imagining committee, direction to me to advocate for discussion and development of a community workforce agreement as part of this process as we go forward, and to see what comes from the City of Rio Grande discussion on Tuesday for the council benefit. This did not come up from the City of Pismo Beach, so this will be something that we'll have to go back and discuss with them and see where they are on this particular issue and to see if there is its commonality on this point. If there's not, then we'll need to reconsider what our options are now with regard to the operating agreement, knowing that we still have time to discuss and deliberate on this for really over the next year plus, as we are still 2 years away from even having the bidding documents for the construction work. So there will be time for deliberations, but I just want to make sure I'm clear on the council's intent for what you wish for me to be able to advocate on your behalf.
And I think from my perspective, that is correct. It's like the certainty of the document in front of us allows Pismo to go apply for grants, continues to advance the project from a preliminary construction document, conceptual document stage. But before we get to construction documents, we as a group, three organizations or four, if Oceano joins us, that a CWA should be discussed and either agreed to or fashioned. So there's obviously the local hire provision, but I think the next year of discussions is where that that crafting of that can take place. So,
and just to further make sure I'm clear, and just. Based on that time frame that the mayor articulated, which I think it does make sense, if there is not consensus right now on this point by the three partner agencies, that would not preclude us from continuing to advance this as we go forward over the next several months, 6 months, year, as we continue to move this point forward. Just want to make sure that we can continue to discuss this and deliberate on this and work with the management committee to be able to work towards consensus on this point over time.
That was my desire, yes, because realizing that Pismo hasn't brought up this item when they approved it, I don't want to lose the time and the momentum of the operating agreement in front of us. But it is an item that that we as the three organizations, I think, need to come to consensus on before we get to the actual advertisement for bids. So did that generate any questions or concerns by council members? Okay, I'm seeing three shaking heads of no's. I'll go ahead and turn it over to and see who's ready to make a motion.
All right, I'll give it a go. I guess I should ask our city attorney if we need to do these separately or all in one go.
Really at the discretion of council.
You can combine them if you desire, or if you want to separate them, you can do that also.
I prefer to do it all in one go. What do you think, Mr. Mayor?
Let's give it a shot.
Okay. Very good then. So then I make a motion that we adopt a resolution. May I just say I move for staff's recommendations?
I would second that. So with the understanding that we can provide, we've provided additional direction to the city manager regarding the local hire / CWA provisions, so which doesn't change your motion. Is that okay, Mr. Hale?
Yes. I would make your motion so that your approval of what you're intending to do is incorporate the resolution for approval of the CEQA findings and then also the operating agreement. Is that correct?
Adopting the CEQA findings, statement of overriding considerations, and a mitigation monitoring and reporting program.
Okay. What I might recommend is you go ahead and do that one first. Go ahead and adopt the resolution. Make the findings related to the CEQA documents that are contained therein. I would include those findings within your motion. Once that's approved, then I would adopt the operating agreement. I think that's a little safer course.
So from that perspective, it sounds like we're going to go back and do a motion on each item.
Yes. Okay. All right, then. So let's start up.
With the CEQA document being first.
Correct.
Yes. Okay. So then I'll make a motion that we adopt a resolution adopting CEQA findings, a statement of overriding considerations, and mitigation monitoring and reporting program, and directing the city clerk to file the notice of determination for Central Coast Blue. So that's the first motion. Okay.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Mr. Hale, did that adequately capture what you're looking for?
Yes.
Very good. Then, Madam City Clerk, roll call, please.
Councilmember Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Robert.
Yes.
Councilmember Miller.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes. Very good. So okay. That takes us to the two remaining items.
Yes. So I make a motion that we reaffirm the city manager's authority to enter into an operating agreement for the Central Coast Blue project.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. So let's do a roll call on that one, please.
Councilmember Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Miller.
Yes.
Councilmember Robert.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes.
Okay. Third is I move that we receive updated utility rate study findings and recommendations related to Central Coast Blue costs and provide. Oh, we'll leave it at that. Oh, no. And provide direction to staff to implement the Proposition 218 noticing process for holding a public hearing on May 10th, 2021.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Let's do a roll call, please.
Councilmember Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Robert.
Yes.
Councilmember Miller.
Yes.
Mayor.
Yes. Very good. So we have a Central Coast Blue operating agreement and related CEQA actions and the utility rate study. So, Mr. City Manager, we've provided some voluminous direction on the CWA. Just want to make sure that you are still clear and are don't need any further articulation on our part.
I am clear. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And just a congratulations to the council. This is a very significant milestone. And I want to credit Mr. Ray for his work on the technical side with his public works colleagues, Mr. Hale for his work with the other city attorneys, and the council's leadership in helping to advance this critical project for our region. Thank you.
Yes, and I'll echo those thanks to Mr. Ray, Mr. Hale, and then also to Mr. Heimel and Ms. Miller for joining us this evening and providing that technical guidance from the Pismo Beach perspective. So unless there's anything remaining on that item, we'll conclude and go to item number 12, unless someone flags me down and indicates they need a break. Not seeing anybody needing a break so far. We'll go ahead and to our item number 12, which is a fiscal year 22-26 capital improvement program overview and direction. So this is City Engineer Ray and Public Works Director Ray.
Thank you. Two hats there. And actually, I'd like to introduce our capital projects manager, Aaron Wiggin, who will be presenting this item this evening.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Thank you for joining us.
Great. I'm going to share my screen here. Hopefully, you can all see that. Can everyone see that okay? Okay.
Yes.
Great. Okay. Sorry about that. So this is the draft capital improvement program overview here. And to give you a little bit of background, the draft CIP is presented for your review and direction. And the CIP identifies projects and funding sources and schedules over a five-year period, so starting with fiscal year 22 next year. The goal is to advance projects related to council goals and priorities. And this provides budget guidance for our two-year adopted budget. But first, I'd like to highlight our completed projects. So this is these are projects that have been completed or will be completed by the end of this fiscal year. So we have the Ramona Garden Park Master Plan over here to your right that was completed earlier this year. And then the 16th Street Park Playground will be completed by the end of this fiscal year. And then we have a lot of streets projects that were completed this year. We had the Nacimiento Cross Gutter project completed. We had this Safe Routes to School sidewalk infill project near Grover Beach Elementary School that was completed. The major street design will be complete by the end of the fiscal year. The Oak Park intersection of Grand and Oak Park construction will be done by the end of the fiscal year. You've seen 229511. I know you, Mr. Mayor, have seen that one personally. That's underway and will be complete by the end of the fiscal year. And then 2295-12, which is our light maintenance project, will be complete by the end of the fiscal year. The fiscal year 22 and 23, the CIP here, let me just go through them individually here. The fiscal year 22 has proposed projects with a budget about $13 million from 12 different funding sources, which does include some carryover funding. Fiscal year 23 has 16 projects with a budget of about $8 million from 8 different funding sources. So a lot of these projects span, you know, several fiscal years, and some of them have expended funds in previous years. And so Council will adopt the final CIP as part of the budget process. Some of the projects here, I'll go through each category. We'll start with parks. Mentone Park, the project is to have a decomposed granite walkway along Trouville and realign the perpendicular parking there to have it be parallel parking. And then we'll also look at preparing design and construction documents to implement the Ramona Garden Park Master Plan, and then improvements at the skate park facility. For public buildings and facilities, there's the corporation yard design and then potential property acquisition, and then police station improvements. And streets and storm drains, this is our largest category in the CIP here. We have the annual street lighting project, a sidewalk infill project, which in fiscal year 22 is coordinated with the Measure K projects. And then we have the sidewalk improvements, which is a separate project, and this is for sidewalk repairs throughout the city. And then there's the major streets project with fiscal year 22 being South Oak Park from West Grand to Mentone. And then the Measure K 2295-10, which is portions of Manhattan, Seabright, and Trouville. And then 2295-13, which is portions of Manhattan and Seabright also, but that's further west. Those will actually both be starting. Construction will start with 2295-10 within the next month, and then design for 2295-13 will start towards the end of this fiscal year. And water, we just spent quite a long time on Central Coast Blue, so that's second largest funded category here is water, and that's because of the Central Coast Blue contribution. And then there's the water main upgrades and water main zone valves and the upgrade of the 2-inch and 4-inch water mains, which is funded with the CDBG funds. And all of these projects are mostly to get these done ahead of the street projects. And then we have the water meter replacement program in here. Moving on to the sewer wastewater projects, we have a sewer system upgrades project to support future development. And then we have a separate project for upgrades for existing flows. And then we are looking at completing the Front Street lift station upgrades and then Nacimiento lift station upgrades. And then here I have this graphic. I'd like to share this because it's a good representation or a good graphic showing exactly how much half of your CIP is for the streets and storm drains category here. And then again, water is the second most funded category, right? Then followed by the sewer, then public buildings and facilities, and then parks. Of course, we always have unfunded needs here, and these needs are about $60 million. So I just highlighted a few projects, a few of the larger projects from that unfunded category. Some of these projects are the Multi-Generational Community Center, City Hall Civic Center, the Corporation Yard, the Ramona Garden Park improvements. A portion of these improvements are in the CIP, I believe like fiscal years 25 and 26, but the remainder are unfunded. And then the citywide disability access improvements, major streets rehabilitation, and then the West Grand Avenue storm drains. So the draft CIP includes projects funded by 12 different funding sources. And this year, the general fund contribution is about $2.1 million. The general fund will help fund the skate park improvements, the courtyard design, city hall improvements, the street lighting project, and then a good portion of those, the general fund will fund the South Oak Park project. Gas tax funds will be used to fund the sidewalk infill project and the sidewalk improvement project, and then the South Oak Park project. LTF funds here. One thing I do want to point out with these LTF funds, this allocation, the city actually has a balance. Our typical allocations of LTF funds are around $300,000 annually, and about $100,000 LTF funds are usually in the CIP. So this is why this is so high, is because the city has a balance, and that's being allocated to the South Oak Park project. And then we have the SB1 or RMRA funds, which are allocated to the South Oak Park project. The Transportation Development Impact Fee, or DIF funds, are allocated to the South Oak Park project. And then we have the Measure K14 bonds, which are used for the 2295-10 and 13 projects. And then the CDBG project is about a $2.3 million grant funded project. The Water Fund, again, is about a $1.8 million contribution, and that's for Central Coast Blue, water main upgrades, water main zone valves, water delivery upgrades, and then the water meter replacement program. And then the wastewater DIF will help to support the sewer system upgrades for future development and for existing flows, so two separate projects. And then the wastewater fund will be allocated for the upgrades for existing flows, and then the Front Street lift station and the Nacimiento lift station upgrades here. So again, this is the CIP for the two-year budget, and staff is looking for your direction to finalize the CIP in conjunction with the budget adoption. So are there any questions, or do you want me to review anything? I know I moved through that really fast for you.
Thank you for that presentation. It went very, very nicely, very smoothly, and I appreciate the highlighting of all of that. So let's see if there's questions from the council. We'll start with Council Member Roberts. Nope, did we lose Council Member Roberts?
There. Oh, no, there you I'm are. Here. My toolbar keeps covering up my controls. No questions. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Miller.
No questions. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Bright.
Thank you. Yes, that was a great report. A lot of information, but it's really easy to follow. So I did have a question regarding the police station improvement, CIP 3264. And I'm just asking about the project itself, if that's appropriate. It said it includes exterior improvements for protecting vehicles and equipment. What does that mean?
Sure. They're looking for canopies to help protect the armored vehicles. And they're looking for exterior storage facilities outside to improve their storage outside. And then parking lot rehabilitation out back for them. But mostly the canopies that will help protect the armored vehicles.
So you mean like a metal canopy that is then like secured into the asphalt type of thing?
It would be a concrete footing, but yes.
I see. Okay. Interesting. Alrighty. And then I spoke with Matt on Friday about one of the unfunded CIP programs. I don't know, Matt, shall I talk about that here, or is that not necessary? Remember our conversation about the cameras?
This is the time to ask that as well. And actually, Aaron, if we can go ahead and stop the screen share and bring it back to the full council, that'd be great. Thank you.
Sure. Sorry about that.
Okay, so there was one item in the unfunded category, and it's the security camera at park facilities. And does it have a number? I guess I don't know if you give numbers to the unfunded capital improvements.
We don't. It's on the first page of the unfunded needs, I believe.
Yes, I have. So my question there is, first of all, the estimated cost is fairly low, but there's some under the description of proposed work, Cleaver property. Well, we're not going to put a camera there, I don't imagine. And I think we've put the cameras in at Grover Heights Park, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, I'm just thinking maybe we might be able to put that with my colleague's agreement. Maybe we can finish that up and get that out of the unfunded capital improvement program part.
Sure. I don't know. And given this amount, that's certainly doable, especially with the skate park improvements that we're already be doing and things like that. I could look at that for the for the final.
Okay. Yeah, I just think maybe that's one thing we could get taken care of there. Anywho, I think those are my only questions at this point in time. Thank you.
Very good. So just a quick follow-up on that. So Ms. Wiggin, if you could, is there a order of magnitude for that cost for those cameras, just so we continue through questions and get to deliberations?
Are you asking me that?
Actually, asking Aaron that.
I don't know the cost right off the top of my head. I don't want to give you incorrect information, but just given this amount, I believe we could incorporate this with each individual park, so we could incorporate this with the final document.
Gotcha. And actually, I just found the page. I see a estimated cost of $60,000. Is that intended possibly to include the remainder camera work, or is there more camera work expected?
This would be the remainder.
Okay. Very good.
Actually,
thank you.
And Mayor, maybe this would be a moment just to have the police chief, who's still on, be able to just provide a quick update on the cameras that we've recently installed, and then perhaps what we would see as the next ones. And Councilmember Bright is right. The Cleaver property is soon no longer to be our property. So that is a site that doesn't need a camera going forward. So we can amend this in the final version. But perhaps the chief can just provide a quick highlight of where we are with the camera upgrade right now.
Thank you, Matt. Mayor and members of the council, I will let you know that we did recently, as of this last week, Hero Park did come online with a new camera system down there. So we were able to expand our camera network. We have not been able to bring the skate park online because of the logistics at the skate park, and then that's what a majority of this CIP funding is for, is to bring electricity to that park and in order to be able to put camera systems there. And then some of the systems that we have up are a little old, and then they're running dated at, like, Ramona Park needs replacement systems. So this funding will help to replenish the cameras that are breaking and to get all of the parks on camera. The last remaining park is the skate park.
May I ask a question?
Certainly.
So then the capital improvement program for the skate park improvements, does that include the it's including lighting? Does that include security camera as well?
I'm not sure if it included the security cameras, because I believe they were concentrating on the infrastructure there with the concrete and the other items they were doing. But a security camera at a park is about $10,000 cost for just the cameras, and that's prior to any of the infrastructure, such as electrical.
To answer your question, the CIP for the park did not include cameras.
So do we not want to combine those and put that all in the same CIP? I mean, I'm just asking the question.
Mayor Lee, can I make a recommendation?
Yes, sir.
So you know, as it stands, the CIP represents our best estimate of the costs of various projects. And as you've seen in this particular case, we anticipated that the camera project was a separate project from the park development projects that you're generally seeing. But as we go through a fiscal year, there's generally project savings. There are also operating and maintenance cost savings throughout the year. I think because as presented, we've essentially consumed all the funding available for the CIP in competing with other items for the adoption of the fiscal year or 2-year budget upcoming for the council. Maybe what we could do is just commit to, as project savings come forward, attempting to combine these with our parks projects so as to complete all the anticipated camera upgrades and camera installation projects along the way, rather than, because otherwise we'd need to go into the CIP and sort of figure out what project in the CIP could we perhaps pull back on a little bit at this time to generate funding for that camera project. I think if you're generally happy with all the projects that are in CIP, I suspect that we can find $30,000 or $40,000 in project savings over the next 2 fiscal years with the number of park projects that are out there.
Does that adequately address your question, Councilmember Wright?
Sure, I guess. I mean, if that works for you, you're the one who's administering this and, you know, tracking it and all. So, yeah, I mean, if that works for you guys, then it works for me. So, sure. Okay. Well, thank you.
Very good. Okay, so then from that perspective, let's see if Councilmember Robert, do you have any questions?
I do not. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Miller.
Not a question, but I wanted to comment that I think the approach proposed by Mr. Ray makes a lot of sense, that we complete those projects based on savings that are realized through other projects.
Very good. Okay. So, and I didn't have any specific questions. I guess, and perhaps mine's a comment. So I'll go ahead and open this up to the public and see if any members of the public want to call in at 805-321-6639. And I'll turn it over to our city clerk to see if there's any members of the public who want to speak on this item.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and close public comment on this item and bring it back to the council. So I think from a comment standpoint, I think the approach that I see here is if we incorporate the skate park item, whether it be cameras or whatnot, into the final document, that provides direction to staff to proceed on that when it's available, so or when capacity arises. So rather than having it in the unfunded, we can put it into the funded category, and then it can get worked on as internal capacity of staff is available. Is that a good way to explain that, Mr. Bonson?
Yeah, I think just to move this part along, we can incorporate this into our project scope. We won't have a separate security camera project. We will build this into park projects. And frankly, much of this work can be done on an operating basis. I think we made enough progress in our camera effort. A couple of years ago, we had no progress, and we really were starting from scratch. But now we're far enough along, thanks to the work of police, public works, that we can accomplish this within the project scope of other park facilities. So what I'm hearing the council say is we'll take this off the unfunded list. We'll incorporate this into our other projects as we have funding and savings available, which I believe we will, and we'll get this done.
Very good. Okay. Yeah, I think that's a great explanation of how we can move that forward. And I think our public works staff has job security for a number of years based upon the can-do and the action-oriented approach that that we as a city are taking on our capital projects. So let's see if there's other comments on this item. So Council Member Miller, any comments?
You know what, I just thought of a question that I had earlier, and it's pertaining to the Coastal Commission and their directive to shut down OHV use, and then the pier entrance, Pier Avenue entrance to the beach. How is that going to affect our CHP projects, and should we prioritize changes on Grand Avenue over the other projects that we have going on?
And maybe I'll weigh in on that momentarily, and then let either Mr. Bronson or Mr. Ray kind of follow in on that. So obviously at the Coastal Commission, I presented our request for traffic considerations. And I think the commission did have a robust discussion about that. Didn't take any final action with respect to those improvements, but the sense that I got was as State Parks comes back with a modification program, they will need to go back to the Coastal Commission with a CEQA document that would need to be approved, which would inherently include necessary improvements to either Grand Avenue, 4th Street intersection, or some other intersections within the city. So I'll turn to Mr. Bronson and see if he agrees, but I don't anticipate that the city will have a public works capital improvement program item for those specifically. I think those would be directed by public works, by the Coastal Commission for state parks to have to implement those within our city.
I hope to share that optimism that the mayor articulated. I think the first part is yes, the Coastal Commission did essentially enact conditions for the permit, the underlying permit. And now State Parks has to respond to that. They have to modify their public works plan. They have to do CEQA analysis on the Pier Avenue closure and other factors and bring that back to the commission. What remains to be seen is what that will mean for areas outside of their jurisdiction. State Park's jurisdiction ends at the Meadow Creek Bridge. So once you go eastward, go across Highway 1, that's the city of Grover Beach. And whether State Parks will fund improvements in the city of Grover Beach is a question mark at this point. I think that's where the city's role will step in to be assertive on our behalf for what interest we have and make those known to our delegation, ultimately to the state, to be able to have mitigation funding to help support that. So I guess I would just add a cautionary note that I don't think that that's necessarily assured. I think we have to be actively engaged in asserting our interest, because we'll have thousands of cars traveling on our city streets where there are not cars today to that same volume. And that's a broader conversation, of course, with regards to Coastal Commission actions and potential other steps. I would note, maybe to Councilmember Miller's point about major street projects, as Ms. Wiggin mentioned, we have major streets happening each and every year over the next 5 years. The first one right out of the gate is South Oak Park Boulevard. That project is nearing final design. Council's given us the green light to proceed, and that would be under construction by the end of this calendar year. The fiscal year after that, we have West Grand Avenue between 4th and 8th Streets, given the improvements the council wanted to see there in that section. The year after that, North 4th Street. That's really a key year. If we wait much longer on that street, the cost will grow significantly, because it won't be a grind and overlay project. It'll be a full-depth rehab. After that, West Grand Avenue, 11th to Oak Park, and then after that, South Oak Park down to the Pike. That's the suggested order right now, but over the next year, we'll know a lot more about what's happening with state parks. We'll know a lot more about what's happening with West Grand Avenue impacts, and so the council may be in position to flip the order of the West Grand Avenue projects as we know more information over this coming year. So I think we'll be monitoring that carefully and advocating for our interests and our funding needs for West Grand Avenue and the impacts we know will occur.
Very, very aptly put, in the fact that, we have a lot of work on major streets, and I think the other opportunity, in addition to what the city manager mentioned, is there seems to be renewed interest at the federal level for an infrastructure program. And as infrastructure funding comes down, Grover Beach has always been poised to take advantage of those funds by having very similar to what we did with the CDBG funding, where we designed the project in advance of applying for the funds. I think the flexibility from this council and future councils to be able to take a look at that program and earmark funds as expeditiously and effectively as possible is going to be a big help from staff's acumen when it comes to that implementation of the program. So, Councilmember Miller, any additional questions, comments?
No additional questions. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Robert, any comments?
A comment. Yeah, I think that's a really good plan that we need to pay attention to. So, I agree with those statements.
Very good. Councilmember Bright.
No, thank you.
Okay. Very good. So, and I just want to say thank you to staff for putting this together. Again, we are an action-oriented city, and that is represented in the five-year CIP. And the fact that we have amazing staff that knows how to implement these projects so expeditiously and economically and bring them to completion in a timely fashion is a testament to Mr. Ray, Ms. Wiggin, and the entire Public Works and Maintenance staffs. So let's take a quick look. I see a receive information and provide direction to staff to finalize the CIP in conjunction with the fiscal year 21-23 budget. Heard a couple of suggestions. Is there any other modifications to the direction for Mr. Bronson that we need to do? Or Mr. Bronson, are you clear on what the council was looking for?
Thank you, Mayor. We are clear at the staff level. This really is the continuation of our budget process. You set your goals a month ago. Street improvements was one of your top four goals, and I think you see the CIP really responds to that in a very significant way, along with the other projects that we've been working on. This really is a culmination of 6 months of work, and I would like to credit Ms. Wiggin in particular for her stewardship of our CIP program, Mr. Ray as well, and our entire team. And this is a $13 million CIP. For context, that's the size of our operating budget. This is the single largest CIP in the city's history and really reflects the tremendous focus and ability we have to deliver, and a general fund contribution of $2.1 million. compared to $300,000 that we've traditionally had every year. And Measure F20, passed by voters, is really the biggest reason for that. So this fulfills our commitment to the voters. You pass Measure F20, we're putting those funds to good use to build a better city. So thank you, Mayor and Council, for your support. And we will finalize the CIP and get this done with the budget coming to you in a couple of months.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Bronson. Let's just make sure one last check to see if there's any questions or comments on this item before we proceed to our 13th and last item for the evening. Seeing no microphones go off, we'll say thank you to Mr. Ray, thank you to Ms. Wiggin, and we have a five-year CIP. So that does take us to item 13 on the agenda tonight, which is a procedure to fill vacant council seat and Mayor Pro Tem appointments. So I guess I'll turn it over to Mr. Hale.
Thank you very much, Council. I'll be brief on this one. We've done this a few times. Based on Government Code 3652, we have a couple of options, actually about three of them, by which you can fill vacant seats. Obviously, this is in regards to Mayor Pro Tem Miriam Shaw's vacancy by leaving the jurisdiction, finding a residence outside of our jurisdiction. So therefore, one of them is that you are entitled, if you desire, to make an election within 60 days to commence or hold a special election. That election would be held at the next regularly established election day, which is not less than 114 days from the call of the special election. The other option, which is one that you as a council have done again on a number of occasions, is that if the vacancy takes place within the second term of the office of the former incumbent, you can appoint that individual, and that individual that you appoint will then maintain the position for the unexpired term of that former incumbent. The third is to adopt an ordinance. Now, the ordinance has some minor regularities or differences than the state statute. If you so choose to want to do that, I can go into further discussion about that. But essentially, as of this point in time, you have previously, in March 4th, 2019, appointed Karen Bright. You have previously appointed Desi Lance on January 7th, 2019. And you... can do that in a number of different ways in terms of making an appointment. One of those is nominating individuals by each council member, and you can therefore then vote for that appointment based on that nomination. You did that in 2007 and 2008. You can receive letters of interest from the public and interviewing each applicant in open session before the vote for the appointment. You did that in 2013 and January 2019. Or you can just simply select an individual for appointment for a previous list of applicants, which was done in March of 2019. There is no specific defined parameters by within which you can come up with a process of appointment. You can do it however you desire, but those are the ones that have typically been done in the past. There are other options like looking at or selecting an individual who received the next highest number of votes below in previous elections. Those are another way within which you can do it. But again, that would be up to you. The main thing to remember is that whatever you decide that you wish to do or whatever direction you give to staff, that you have to do that within 60 days from commencement of the vacancy. And that vacancy took place on March 8th, so you have till approximately March 14th, 2021 to make that call. One other item that we included in this, besides the appointment process and giving direction to staff in terms of how you would like us to bring this back to you and what procedures you would like us to follow, is the appointment of the mayor of the Mayor Pro Tem. Councilmember Shaw was the mayor pro tem at the time of the vacancy of her position. So therefore, it would be pursuant to the council resolution number 08-18 in the power of the appointment and the replacement
in the case of a vacancy of that position, is that of the mayor. So the mayor can take that if you so choose this evening to appoint a new mayor pro tem if you desire. So as I said, I will keep that brief, and if you have any questions, I'm available for questions.
Very good. And before we go out to questions, I will invite members of the public who do want to speak on this item to call in at 805-321-6639. So let's start and see if there's any questions. We'll start with Council Member Miller.
No questions. Thank you.
Very good. Council Member Roberts.
I have no questions. I understand. Thank you.
Council Member Bright.
No questions. Thank you.
Very good. And I've been through this far too many times to start asking questions about it now. thank you for the presentation, Mr. Hale. So I'll turn it to the city clerk and see if there's any members of the public that want to speak on this item.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. Thank you. I will go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to the council for consideration. So let's go ahead and see who has perhaps is the longest serving consistently serving member of the council. I'll just kind of express that the process that has worked best for us recently has been to have an application process and do a public interview process. And I think realizing that has brought forth good candidates and brought forth candidates who have served the city well and greatly, I would be supportive of going through that process again. And I'll turn to Council Member Bright, because I know you were appointed once, but were you actually appointed twice?
I was appointed twice. I was the appointee in 2007 when council members, they all brought forth an appointment. I was appointed from the Planning Commission. So that was kind of a interesting procedure.
Your second appointment was we used the same list that we had developed when we appointed Councilmember Lance.
That's correct.
Okay. Yes.
So I would support either one of those two methods. I think I truly prefer having people submit their own letter or using an existing list rather than as council members bringing forth a name, because I prefer the method that we used most recently. That's what I
prefer. Very good. Let's see, Council Member Roberts, any comments or suggestions?
Well, I would prefer an election, but I know how costly that is. I don't think it's fair to the citizens to put that cost burden upon them for a short period of time. So I would also be in favor of an application process, because I believe it gives us an opportunity to pick someone that's actually interested and wanting to run or to be appointed and work with the city. And I think that's very important also. So I would agree with the last process that the city did.
Very good. Council Member Miller.
Thank you. I too am in agreement with appointment by application. I think residents who want to serve but who are unknown to the council members then will have an opportunity to apply rather than having us bring forth names for selection. I think that makes the most sense.
Very good, and I am in support of that as well. So which is also an opportunity that if you do know folks that you want to recommend, they suggest that they fill out an application and become part of that process. So it's the council, I think, as individuals, we can go and make suggestions to residents to do that. And then also, as Council Member Miller mentioned, those that we have not met or don't know but have an interest of serving their community can do that as well. So it sounds like we have consensus to use an application process. I'll turn to either Mr. Bronson or Mr. Hale to see if we need a formal vote on that or if that direction is adequate.
There we go. That should work better. As long as you have a consensus of the council in terms of the direction to staff, that should be adequate.
Okay. Very good. So I appreciate that. So we do have consensus, and now I'll turn to Mr. Bronson to kind of fill in the logistics for us. What would we be looking at from a time frame standpoint and possible interview slots? I know several upcoming meetings have fairly substantive items coming up, and so do we need to consider a special meeting, or what's your thoughts on that?
Sure, thank you. So with the direction that you've just provided, staff will go forward and post the application on our website and send out a news release to let the community know. We can do that as early as tomorrow. So just what I might suggest for your consideration is that we would start the process tomorrow, March 23rd. I'm looking at the wall calendar with all the dates. And perhaps we would provide a 2.5 week window, which is similar to what we did back in 2018. That would extend until, say, Friday, April 9th. To the mayor's point earlier, we would suggest that this probably would be better as a special meeting itself versus trying to incorporate a number of applications, interviews, council deliberations in a regular meeting. When this took place in 2019, this took up the entire meeting. And we do have a number of other agenda items that we'd like to bring forward in a timely manner. So we would suggest that perhaps Monday, April 19th could be a date that the council could hold a special meeting just for this topic. So that would give us about a week to collate all the applications, put them into a packet on April 15th. We could work on interview questions and materials in advance of that meeting. And then assuming council made an appointment that night, then April 26th would be the first regular meeting with the new council member and back to having a 5-member council once again.
Very good. I personally like that approach, having gone through again this process several times. When we do it at a regular meeting and you seat the successful appointee, they immediately have items they're going to be making decisions on without having had perhaps the background or the opportunity to talk with staff and generate their questions as they've been working towards their appointment discussion. So with that, let's first see if council is in agreement with that process. I'm just going to do a quick thumbs up if everybody is. Seeing shaking heads by everybody. Anybody have a concern with a special meeting scheduled for April 19th? Not hearing any concerns. I think we have a process. And I think we have an approach. Okay. Very good. Before we go to the appointment of Mayor Pro Tem, any additional items on the filling of the vacant seats, Mr. Bronson or Mr. Hale?
No, sir. I guess, remember, just one more point, just to confirm with the council that this will be a virtual interview process, which will, given our current situation, so we will deploy our team's technology even further and have virtual interviews and maybe utilize a breakout room to keep the applicants in a separate place before they interview. So we will test our technology boundaries once again and conduct this process virtually, and I'm sure carry it out very effectively.
Good, very good point. And I saw Councilmember Bright, you had a question or maybe
yes.
A comment.
Just a question actually regarding the time. Will it be at 6 o'clock? On the 19th.
That's what we would propose, unless the council wanted to have a different time.
I just wanted to confirm.
I think 6 o'clock sounds like an appropriate time, unless Mr. Robert, with his hand raised, has a different thought.
Mr. Bronson, due to the fact that we're in the red tier, you don't think it's possible for the council to be in session and interview one person at a time, or we do them all at once, or is that the problem? Maybe too many people in City Hall?
I will say that the conversation around public meetings is a broader conversation than the council interview process. And also I would say that the county's guidance to us has been we need to be in the yellow tier before we can contemplate having in-person council or board meetings once again. and that is not foreseen anytime soon.
Okay, thank you.
So it sounds like we have a consensus on an application process, opened tomorrow, close on April 9th, with a special meeting for April 19th at 6 p.m. to conduct interviews and deliberate on possible nominations. Okay, very good. So, and with that, I'll kind of give my thought process for Mayor Pro Tem. So I want to say thank you to each of the council members. Any one of you would do a great job as Mayor Pro Tem. I know that my choice is going to be Councilmember Bright to serve as Mayor Pro Tem for the remainder of this calendar year until we get to the next time it occurs. Because of her longevity with the city and her familiarity with that, but I know in future years, both Councilmember Robert and Councilmember Miller can and I expect will make good mayor pro tems. So with that, I don't think there's any other items to discuss or any other items under item number 13. So we'll go ahead and conclude that item. Bring it back for public communications, where I'll ask members of the public that want to speak under public communications to call in at 805-321-6639. And I'll turn it over to our city clerk and see if anyone has joined us for public comments.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. So then I will go ahead and bring it back to the council for council committee reports. And I'll check in with Councilmember Robert on any committee assignments or reports that he needs to give this evening.
The water area RAC, sorry, so many acronyms, canceled their meeting this month, so we didn't have a meeting, so nothing to report. Are we reporting on community activity at this point, or is that going
to... go ahead and hold that for a moment, and we'll come back to that. So next I'll turn to Councilmember Miller for her committee assignments.
Thank you. So I attended an HSOC meeting where a modernized resource list was discussed. So we're looking to update the resource list for the community. There's discussion about the process for updating the 10-year plan to end homelessness for our county. In that discussion, the framework for updating the plan has been proposed, and more discussion to come on that. We also had a robust discussion on the state rental assistance program that's available to landlords in the community. So landlords can apply for rental assistance on behalf of residents. They would receive 80% of the rent amounts due and would have to agree to forgive the remaining 20%. In exchange for receiving that assistance. That's it.
Very nice. Thank you for that update. And I do recall that the city did put out on our website and our social media about that program. So next I'll turn to Councilmember Bright or Mayor Pro Tem Bright for her committee assignments reports.
Thank you. Well, I had an IWMA or Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting. That was on 3/10, so that must have been, yes, after our last council meeting. So there was another vote held regarding the polystyrene ordinance that was originally passed back in 2019. It was voted to be suspended until April of this year. However, there was then a vote or motion made to rescind that polystyrene ordinance. And that vote, that motion passed by a vote of 7-6. So next meeting, staff is going to bring an ordinance in order to repeal an existing ordinance. There has to be an ordinance to repeal an existing ordinance. So there will be an ordinance that will come to us next meeting in order to repeal or replace the polystyrene ban is what they help people refer to the ordinance that is in place at this time.
Just a clarifying question, if I might, Mayor Pro Tem Bright, in the fact that that doesn't have any effect on our local city ordinance, correct? That is the countywide ordinance.
That's correct. That was a countywide ordinance that is a bit more comprehensive than what the ordinance that we have in our city. There are five cities in the county that have some sort of a polystyrene or a styrofoam ordinance in place, but this would have encompassed the entire county.
So, and then realizing that it is more the current county one that has the possibility of being repealed is more comprehensive than our city ordinance, is there potentially a opportunity for Grover to consider the more comprehensive ordinance if we provide a direction to the city manager to advance that?
Yes. As a matter of fact, Arroyo Grande, they have adopted an ordinance that is very similar to the polystyrene ordinance that the IWMA adopted. And San Luis Obispo, they have a hybrid, something that's not quite as comprehensive, but that is a bit more comprehensive than what we have adopted, that Grover Beach has adopted. Okay. Yes, we could.
So perhaps after the county IWMA makes a choice, we might consider providing direction to the city manager at that time to advance an updated ordinance for polystyrene and other comprehensive items.
Yes, we very well could.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
So we'll have that discussion in the near future then.
Very good. That would be swell. Then I had, Zone 3, and we already talked about the big ticket item, which was the low reservoir level. Then I had mentioned briefly about the contract changes that will be coming to all of the contractors. And right now, it's all in review. We do expect to actually have something to look at in May. So they're working with the tax, all the different tax on scheduling and so on. So I guess we will see the real draft in May, and hopefully I'll have some other information for you from Zone 3 at that time. We just don't have a whole bunch of information yet, so we'll see what those look like at that time. And the Chamber Steering Committee, the big news there, I'm going to let Robert talk about that, because that was the new Exploration Discovery Center. So I'll let him, I'm sure he knows much more about it than the notes I could quickly take down. So I guess I'll cede the floor to our next council member. Thank you.
Very, very good. And I'll let Council Member Robert speak to that under Council Communications. For myself, Council Committee reports, so I had Five Cities Fire Authority. No major news to report out of that committee. We did have a mid-year budget review where the approximately $400,000 was actually added to the budget based upon wildland and out of town reimbursement for our staff as well as our equipment to be used on wildland fires throughout the West. And so that funding has been reimbursed and has been included into mid-year budget for use on one-time equipment purchases or other items. So with respect to a piece of equipment, we as the authority did surplus a vehicle which the chief then did go out and sell to a community up in Washington, which has the unique stance of being below the 49th parallel, which is the northernmost rim of the U.S. But because of its placement in Washington, it is actually connected to Canada rather than the U.S. And so this vehicle, as a purchase vehicle, is actually going to drive up or be hauled up to the Canadian border and then make a 25-mile drive through Canada before it returns to the U.S. For use in a U.S. city. That it's only access to the mainland is via boat. So actually CBS did an interesting report on the largest gated community in the world and the fact that there's no Canadian access to the point and you can't get the ferry across to I think it's Point, the city attorney can remind me, is it like Point Richmond, Washington? I think is the name. So, or Point Robinson. So, either way, it's an interesting story for where our surplus vehicle is going to be landing. So, and didn't have a South Sand committee meeting. So, Mr. Hale, I see that you're going to respond to that.
Yes, I was going to say I believe that was it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Right. So, a little late on getting the mute off.
No worries. Sounds good. And then Monterey Bay, the policy board, didn't have a policy board meeting, but I did have a risk assessment or risk management meeting this morning. And the energy in and the energy out and the revenues in and the revenues out are in balance or in the favor of positive revenues for Monterey Bay Community Power, which is now 3C Energy. So more to follow on that as that progresses. But I'll close council communications except to ask our city manager that if we have notified the Air Pollution Control District and the Homeless Services Oversight Council that our alternates will be attending for the foreseeable future until we make a determination whether those alternates are going to become the primary once we seat a new council member.
Yes, we have.
Thank you. Very good. League of California Cities policy committee reports, nothing to announce there. The next policy committees are in April. So now we'll come back to council communications and I'll turn it over to council member Robert for his council communications.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to let the community know that the South County Family Educational and Cultural Center, formerly known as the Exploration Station, will now be known as the Discovery Center, as two nonprofit groups have merged together, and one of the nonprofits is a 30-year retired teacher who's had a desire and a heart to serve children, and she's dreamed of this and had a vision for this for a long time, and it's finally coming true for her. She's working like a mad dog putting the thing together, and she's going to have a sneak preview this weekend, Saturday, the hours of 10 to 4. Mainly be to see the large rooms that she's put together for the kids. It's very, very, it's going to be fabulous. And I hope that many of you can make it. Due to the COVID, there'll be mask worn, of course, and social distancing and probably a little wait time if it gets crowded to not have so many people in the center. But the whole community is invited and there'll be notices sent out as well. So this Saturday, 10 to 4, I hope you can make it. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. So looking forward to seeing what they've done with that building and that facility and the programs that come into that. So next I'll turn to Councilmember Miller for any council communications.
None for me. Thank you.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
No, none for me. Thank you.
Very good. And my only council commission communications are associated with the dunes and the nearly 12-hour coastal commission that the city manager and I were watching in different locations, but texting each other as it progressed. So as people have probably heard, the phase out of the off highway vehicle ridership has been directed by the Coastal Commission, so it'll be remain to be seen how State Parks interacts with that that news and advances either a public works, a modified public works plan or some other program. So the reason I mentioned under Council Communications is I have taken several interviews, one of which was with the New Times. We did put out a response to an email from Caitlin Leslie at the Tribune, and then also I was interviewed by KMPH out of Fresno for with respect to traffic, and then I have a request pending from the NPR station out of LA to address some questions tomorrow night with respect to that. So my intent is to stick to the items in our letter and our communication that we provided to the Coastal Commission, but I did just want to let the council know that that those requests have come in and on behalf of the city have been addressing those. So I know Mr. Bronson has had some outreach as well, and so we're kind of coordinating those communications internally, and I'm sure he will provide any additional information as is necessary to each of the council members. So with that, I'll turn it over to the city manager for his reports and comments.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just on that note, we are working diligently with the chamber to really help identify where we go from here on this very complicated, sensitive community issue where there are still a lot of strong feelings, strong emotions, and strong interest in how we work through this as a local community. And I think just as we've been building a strong community through our GB Together efforts and through the collaboration and inclusivity we've been showing, this is another example of that. So we have a lot of work to do to prepare for the closing of the Pier Avenue entrance in a year and a half, to prepare for the phase out of OHV activities happening in 3 years out. So just to know that that work starts now, it continues now, and it's done so in a spirit of collaboration, inclusivity, and results in helping to create an even stronger community going forward. But pivoting from that, I wanted just to highlight with regards to COVID, our metrics as a county continue to be very strong. We are decreasing our case numbers, decreasing hospitalizations, increasing vaccinations. We are a leader in that front, and it's really helping us get to this bright light at the end of the tunnel that we all are seeking to get to. We're still in the red tier. No sign of when we'll be entering the orange tier yet, but hopefully soon. And then after that, the yellow tier, and then this additional green tier the governor has spoken of. But at this point, we just need to continue doing what we're doing, showing distance, practicing sanitation practices, making sure we wear our face coverings. That work is important and needs to continue. We can't let up on that as we get better and better. I wanted to reference that the Buy Local program that the chamber is coordinating with our support and our funding has been incredible. To date, we have $32,000 of recorded local spending through this program in just over a month. And that's about $20,000 in customer spending and about $10,000 in gift card spending by the city, by city funds. So that is a strong ROI, and we expect to see that ROI continue as more and more customers put money in the hands of the local community. We have 25 businesses now participating in this program, and that's money that goes to pay rent, pay employees, pay utilities, pay for expansion plans, keep businesses afloat, and we've seen the results of that. So thank you to the council for your continued support of that program. I just, in the last 5 minutes, received a microgrant application or microgrant report from a business, and they said without that grant, they would not have stayed in business. I won't say the name of the business, but just to know that that was literally what they reported out. They would not have stayed in business without the city's support. That's a great indication of what we've been able to do over these last several months. And then lastly, I'll note that, as the council is aware, we have received or will receive funding from the ARPA, American Rescue Plan Act, that was approved and signed by President Biden a few weeks ago. We'll be receiving $2.5 million total as a local community, half of it coming by this June, half of it coming in June of 2022. We're still trying to figure out, along with other communities, what these funds can be used for. The focus from the feds is really focused on supporting businesses, nonprofits, residents, and helping to continue to recover from COVID-19. So we'll be talking to council in April about potential uses of these funds, but just to know that we're working diligently to identify this and build this into our budget process for next fiscal year. And with that, I will yield the floor. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Bronson. So next I'll turn to our city attorney for any reports and comments this evening.
Well, I don't have any tonight, so mine's short.
Very good. Okay. And we have no closed session this evening, so unless there's any members of the council that want to add anything before we adjourn, Council Member or Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
In case people haven't heard, our county is now taking names for people over 50 to have your COVID shot. So go online and get your reservation. I did.
Very good. Thank you for that. Yes, down to age 50, and according to I think I've heard the governor or the desires to have everybody available for a vaccine by the end of May, so which would be great news. So, seeing no other action before us this evening, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Good work.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Good night.